In order, will everyone in the Senate and the galleries please rise for the prayer by the Reverend Gock and remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag.
From the 86th Psalm we hear, "Teach me your way, O Lord, that I may walk in your truth. Give me an undivided heart to revere your name. My God of truth, life has a way of making the most hopeful people skeptical. There is so much that is bogus and so much put before us that at best is half-truth. So we thank you that you have given us the gift of doubting so that we may be seekers of what is truth and is helpful. We thank you for keeping us excited and eager to do what you have sent us here to do. So this week and day, help us as we knock, seek, and ask, obeying your directing us to know the truth and to act on it. In your holy name we pray. Amen."
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
Senators Brown, Chappelle Nadal, Cunningham, Curls, Dixon, Eigel, Emery, Hageman, Holzman, Hoskins, Hummel, Kehoe.
Senate will come to order. Senate will come to order. Madam Secretary, continue with the roll call.
Senators Koenig, Kraus, Leibler, Munslinger, Nasheed, Onder, Richard, Riddle, Rizzo, Romine, Rowden, Sater, Schauf, Schatz, Shoup, Sifton, Sylvie, Wallingford, Walsh, Wasson, Whelan.
Quorum being present, the Senate is in session. Madam Secretary, please read the journal.
Journal of the Senate, first regular session, 33rd day, Thursday, March 2nd, 2017. The Senate met.
Senator from Cole, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that further reading of the journal be dispensed with and the same be approved as though having been fully read.
Senator from Cole moves that the further reading of the journal be dispensed with and same be approved as fully read. Does any senator desire to be heard? Hearing none. Senator from Cole, you're recognized. Close.
Thank you, Mr. President. I close.
Those of the opinion the motion shall prevail, say aye.
Aye.
Those of the contrary, say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Enter Senator from Cole. Purpose you rise.
What order of business are we on, Mr. President?
You're getting ready to go on introduction of guest.
Please go to that order of business.
Introduction of guest. Senator from Cole, what purpose you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, this afternoon we have with us a fine young man to my right and to your left, Mr. President, is Kiefer Schmidt. He's here with us today to job shadow me and visit our state capitol building. Kiefer is a Jefferson City native but is currently attending college at Rockhurst University in Kansas City, where he is double majoring in biology and political science. Mr. President, Kiefer is also a snowboarder, which makes him a person I don't like by nature. I'd ask the body to help me in making Kiefer feel welcome in the Senate chamber
today.
Let's
please welcome the guest from the Senator from Cole into the Missouri Senate. Introduction of guest. Introduction of guest. Petitions, memorials, remonstrances. Petitions, memorials, remonstrances. Resolutions. Resolutions. Concurrent resolutions. Senator from Andrew, what purpose do you rise?
I have a concurrent resolution.
Please send your concurrent resolution forward. Senator from Andrews. Do you care to explain your resolution?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. President. This concurrent resolution just sets up a day recognizing the need to be aware of diabetes and cardiovascular disease. And that's what it does. It recognizes a day that we give special attention to that.
Senator, it will be printed in the journal.
Thank you very much.
Concurrent resolutions. Concurrent resolutions. Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of Senate bills for perfection, and I'd ask that you call the calendar.
Hearing no objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of Senate bills for perfection. Senate Bill 66, Senator from Franklin. Senator from Franklin, we are on Senate Bill 66.
Thank you, Mr. President. I apologize. We were working on an issue here. Mr. President, I move that Senate Bill 66 with Senate Committee Substitute be taken up for perfection.
Senator from Franklin moves that Senate Bill number 66 with Senate Committee Substitute be taken up for perfection. As many as of the opinion that motion shall prevail, say aye. Those of the contrary say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator, do you care to explain your Senate Committee Substitute?
Mr. President, I have a substitute. I'm going to send that forward.
Senator, you need to move for the adoption.
I'm going to move for the adoption of the Senate substitute.
The Senate Committee Substitute, and then explain the bill. And then you have a substitute, and you've sent your substitute forward?
I have sent the substitute forward, yes.
All right.
And I move for the adoption of the substitute. It has been distributed.
And you're asking for a waiver of the reading?
I'm asking for a waiver of the reading.
Hearing no objection, the reading will be waived. Do you care to explain your substitute?
First off, Mr. President, Senate Bill 66 deals with maximum medical improvement, or MMI. In workers' compensation cases, claimants are often encouraged to get a third, fourth, or beyond medical opinions to continue to draw temporary benefits. This situation means that both the worker and the employer are faced with uncertainty for a prolonged period of time. This is the current situation, and it's costly for the employer, and it leaves the worker without permanent certainty. The situation also means that temporary payments are lasting far longer than originally intended, and I've personally dealt with this many cases that have lasted years. We are defining MMI as the point at which the injured employee's medical condition has stabilized and can no longer reasonably improve. Temporary total disability and temporary partial disability payments will stop being paid once the claimant has reached that MMI and return to work. It is important to note that claimants still have the opportunity to receive a second opinion, but it must be done in a timely manner. The end of the bill deals with this and allows the claimants to obtain a second opinion within 9 months of MMI being determined. Extenuating circumstances, as determined by an administrative law judge, allows for an extension of this 9-month limit. In the committee substitute, several compromise and clarifications were reached. We clarified the temporary total disability, temporary partial disability benefits. They are not payable if the employer returns to work for light duty, for instance. We also compromised from 6 months to 9 months to get a second opinion, and we allow employers to waive the time limit if they would so choose. And in the Senate substitute, we are clarifying that MMI is also determined by the employer's physician. The reason for that is because that is the treating physician, and who better to recognize the fact that he have reached the point of maximum mental improvement than the treating physician. And with that, Mr. President, I would answer any questions.
Does any senator desire to be heard on Senate substitute for Senate Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 66? Senator from the first, what purpose do you rise?
To inquire of the senator from Franklin.
Senator from Franklin, do you yield from the inquiry from the senator from the first?
I do.
You may proceed.
All right, so we have a fresh Senate substitute on this bill.
The only thing in the substitute, all we did was made a clarifying on page five, line 25, and page 10, line 17, that we clarified that MMI is determined by the employer's physician.
Maximum medical
MI is determined by the employer's physician.
Yeah. So, and what is the standard by which maximum medical improvement has to be determined by? How do we know when it's happened and when it hasn't? I say that, I mean, that's the sort of thing that can get litigated from time to time, of course.
Well, and we are defining MMI as the point at which the injured employee's medical condition has stabilized and can no longer reasonably improve. That's how we're describing MMI.
Okay. And, but that's, I mean, I assume that's like any other medical evidence in any court of law anywhere where that physician's opinion, I mean, we're talking about opinion testimony, right?
Right.
So, I mean, the standard for admission of pretty much any medical opinion in Missouri courts anywhere that I'm aware of would be within a reasonable degree of medical certainty. Is there a reason that we don't include those words in the passage on page 5?
I don't know that there's any reason why we didn't include that, but...
Would you have heartburn about including those?
I would entertain looking at the
sure.
language. I mean, you're putting at a reasonable degree of medical certainty is what you're... as determined by the...
Yeah.
employer's physician.
Yeah, that's helpful. All right, I know that with the new substitute, I think that there are probably one or more members of the body who might have been looking at the prior version and may or may not have had thoughts on discussion to be had, and they may now be redrafting. So I'm just taking a few minutes here. Maybe, maybe not. I don't know. I'm looking at the senator from the 4th who I need to follow up with on a matter that he just flagged me down on, and then I have to imagine that it's probably very challenging for him to... Tomorrow's a pretty busy day in his family, I'll say it that way. His spouse is on the ballot tomorrow.
Oh, really?
For alderwoman, yes. So it's got to be all he can do not to be on a doorstep in the city of St. Louis right now.
Glad he could join us here today.
Yes, well, duty comes first, yes. So, all right. So, and the other change in the Senate substitute was where again? I'm sorry.
It was on page 5, line 25, and page 10, line 17.
10, line 17.
Yeah.
Okay. Hold on just a second here. And that is that the same change?
Yes. Yep.
Got it. So, well, okay. So that. So what? Well, what is changing there? I see maximum medical improvement. Which is obviously defined in the section we were talking about a minute ago. What's the other change there?
On what was the question?
Page, you said the other change was on page 10 or page
9? Page 10. There was one on page 5
yeah.
and one on page 10.
All right. What was that other change?
Page 10 was the same change. Same language was inserted on page 10 as determined. It was on line 17.
Got it.
As determined...
I don't see the words as determined. First of all, let me make sure I'm in the right version. 0.03F.
You're right. I think your edit is correct. Yes.
0.03F. Okay. I don't see as determined there.
Page line 5 and page 10, 17. Upon receipt of a permanent disability rating from the employer's physician, go back and refers to the employer's physician.
Got it. Okay. All right. Well, that's helpful. Thank you, Senator.
Yeah.
Mr. President.
Senator from the 1st, what purpose do you rise?
May I inquire the senator from the 13th?
Senator from the 13th, you yield from an inquiry from the senator from the 1st.
I do.
You may proceed.
Senator, I see that you're now at your desk. A moment ago, you were over toward the front of the chamber, and I had a few questions of the senator from Franklin about the changes in the floor sub. And wanted to see what your thoughts were on this matter.
Well, Senator, you're the attorney, but I had a couple of attorneys tell me. Well, first on page 5.
Okay.
Lines 22 through 25.
Yeah.
For the purpose of this chapter, maximum medical improvement shall mean the point at which injured employee's medical condition has stabilized and can no longer reasonably improve, which that's, I, from what I understand, is common language.
Right.
That everybody works with now, and then we're, then it goes on to say, as determined by the employer's physician.
Right.
I got a problem with that. I just think it, you know.
Right.
Puts all the balls in the employer's basket.
Sure. So
I think it would be difficult for the employee. I mean, nobody knows their own body like you know your own body, and whether you're capable of going back and doing the work or not.
Well, and certainly, look, in the majority of cases, there's going to be no dispute about what's transpired. However, you've got the dispute resolution process for the cases in which reasonable minds may differ.
Right.
On, in this case, whether somebody's reached maximum medical improvement. And in those contested workers' compensation proceedings, and I'm not a workers' compensation lawyer, but my understanding is that you will have what we call dueling experts, where you have somebody testifying from the employer's standpoint and somebody testifying from the employee's standpoint. I assume under current law, the administrative law judge gets to hear from both.
I would assume, and I don't know. I just think that, you know, as determined by the employer's physician, that's somebody who is paid by the employer.
Right.
Now, it's just human nature to come up with a, you know where I'm going with this.
Yeah. Senator. Well, there's certainly concern
that. And I think
that
you need an independent physician that, you know, we try and have independent folks when we go to mediation and everything else, but we want to hire a physician that's paid far from the employee.
Well, as as it is sometimes said, there's the concern that there could be a conflict of interest, or as Stephen Colbert would put it, much worse, a unity of interest.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, I'm not here to question the good faith testimony under oath of any member of the medical profession regarding maximum medical improvement. I will say, though, that currently we have more than one voice in the room. any more or less than I would impugn the medical testimony of an employee expert witness. But in point of fact, these things get heard because and only because reasonable medical minds testifying within a degree of medical certainty, a reasonable degree of medical certainty, can differ on when you reach the point of maximum medical improvement, much as they can differ on any other issue, such as causation or foreseeability or negligence or anything else that happens in the practice of medicine.
Oh, I agree with you, Senator. I just don't like that phrase. I'd love for that to come out and we put something in that says to a reasonable degree of medical certainty, anything like that.
Fair enough. What do you think about the rest of the floor substitute? I assume you by now had a few minutes to look through it.
I have looked. The only other thing that I seen that was on page 10 that I believe you were speaking to the senator from Franklin about. Did I get that right?
Senator from Franklin, yes. And page 10, I think, also. I mean, I wasn't there for the conversation, but that's what he was talking about.
He and I were having a conversation before we picked up the bill about this part here, and I kind of upon receipt of a permanent disability rating from the employer's physician, a claimant shall have a period of 9 months from such date to acquire a rating from a second physician of his or her own choosing. I talked to some attorneys that work in this field, and they said it takes them 3 to 6 months to schedule. Sometimes just an appointment to get that rating. But we were talking, and the senator from Franklin said that he could maybe, and we didn't really get down in the weeds about it, but I'm thinking about offering an amendment to change that 9 to 6, so it would read, shall have a period of 6 months from such date, take out, acquire a rating, and put in, schedule a rating exam from a second physician of his or her own choosing. And I think that the senator didn't like taking out, acquire a rating, thought he left it too open-ended if we didn't change the 9 months to 6 months so that these cases are resolved in a timely manner.
Well, I want to be clear. So your concern is you want to make sure these things don't drag out unnecessarily?
Well, I think we all have that concern, but I just had a problem with acquire a rating within the time period given, which would be a 9 month period. It didn't seem long enough. But if you have the exam scheduled within a 6 month period, I think that's a good compromise. I mean, that gives both sides a little, you know, that gives the folks that can't receive the rating within 9 months, they have it scheduled within 6 months, and I'll bet they have that exam within 9 to 12 months.
Senator, if I could take a moment to sort of back up to the broader context of the bill itself. In the bigger picture, I mean, obviously we're changing how our laws address the issue of maximum medical improvement. What's your sense of the bill in its totality? I mean, are you of the view that we are engaged in a reasonable debate about fair provisions to change the law, or are you concerned that this is a bill that might be detrimental to workers in our state?
Well, Senate Bill 66, I was fine with that because it was just codifying language, I think, that's used now in the system. And so I didn't think that this was going to be a long, drawn-out discussion. Now, I don't know what the Senate committee substitute, how it differed from the Senate substitute, because I guess somebody in the office read it because they were fine with the substitute from the committee.
Yeah.
And then right before we came in here, somebody said, guess what? There's a floor sub.
Yeah. So I want to work through.
I added those two changes in there.
I want to take a minute, if we could, to just kind of work through the changes on pages 10 and 11. I understand the rest of what the bill is doing, and like you, I would say I don't have any deep-seated philosophical opposition to it with the one notation on page 5 that we discussed, I think. So on page 7, what we're saying is if there's a compromise offered after maximum medical improvement has been reached, once there's a permanent disability rating from the employer's physician, the claimant then has 9 months to acquire a rating from a second physician. I get that. Second provision is absent a finding of extenuating circumstances by an ALJ or the commission, if after 9 months a claimant has not acquired a rating from a second physician, any compromise settlement entered into under this section shall be based upon the initial rating. Third, a finding of extenuating circumstances by an ALJ or the commission shall require more than failure of the claimant to timely obtain a rating from a second physician. And then lastly, employer can waive. All right. So it seems to me we're talking about a pretty narrow range of issues.
Just those two.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think I understand the issues that are now in front of the body. I don't know if it sounds like there might be alternative renditions of language that might be potentially forthcoming. I don't want to get in the way of that if there's a productive discussion to be had. But just wanted to make sure I understand what the Senate substitute is doing, and appreciate both you and the senator from Franklin taking a few minutes to get me where I need to be on that.
All right. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Senator. Thank you, Mr. President.
Does any other senator desire to be heard? Senator from Andrew, what purpose do you rise?
Mr. President, I have an amendment.
Please send your amendment forward, and has it been distributed?
Mr. President, the amendment has been distributed, and I would ask a waiver of the reading.
Hearing no objection, the reading will be waived. And do you move for the adoption of the amendment?
I do move the adoption of the amendment.
Would you like to explain your amendment? Yeah,
this is the line of duty death benefit that has been passed out of committee consent. We were able to put it on a earlier bill this year already. as an amendment from the senator from the 3rd District, I believe, that we discussed last week. And so it's been discussed on the floor. Deals with line of duty death benefits and not having to put together an estate to be able to claim those benefits. And so with that, Mr. President, I would take any questions. And if there were questions, I would renew my motion.
Thank you, Senator. Does any senator desire to be heard? Does any senator desire to be heard on amendment number 1? Senator from Andrews, you're recognized. Senator from Bart, what purpose do you rise?
Mr. President, to inquire the senator from Andrew.
Senator from Andrew, do you yield from the senator from Barton?
Yes, Senator.
You may proceed.
Good afternoon. You just didn't want that to go by too quick, did you?
That's right. Well, I was trying to remember, did you say this amendment was already added to another bill?
That we added to the senator from the 3rd bill last week.
Okay.
I believe it was that bill. It has been, we discussed it on the floor. I've added it as an amendment already.
Could you explain to me briefly, I don't know if I just missed that or what happened, yeah, Senator,
this
but that doesn't look familiar to me.
This deals with the line of duty death benefits for deceased law enforcement, emergency medical technicians, air ambulance pilots, air ambulance registered professional nurses, or firefighters.
So this is,
Franklin's bill a couple weeks ago is what it was amended on. Excuse me, I was corrected by my most able staff person. Current law requires a surviving spouse, children, parents, or other relatives to open an estate for the deceased prior to receiving the line of duty death benefit. This bill removes that requirement and mirrors federal law for applying for the line of duty death benefit. This is to make sure that the limited resources the survivors receive need not go for unnecessary expenses of setting up an estate. And it does not make any person eligible who is not today eligible and does not increase or decrease the benefit level. So just it takes the federal law language and mirrors it. And I think we had a question on that federal language the last time we offered the amendment as well.
Okay, so most of the new language is on pages 5 and 6. Is that right? A little bit on 2, right?
Yeah, it does away with the estate on 4. And it just says filed not by the estate but by survivors, and then you know most of your language is on 5 and 6.
Okay, so the real key there is the survivor adding the survivors.
The real purpose of this is to try to get at that estate and the need to develop an estate, to be able to receive this benefit.
And once you have survivors,
we really just wanted to make sure that the folks. Just don't have to go through all that rigmarole to be able to receive the benefit.
Okay, and then once you have included survivors, then all the rest, much of this rest of this language, is just delineating how you manage the survivorship. Is that right?
Correct.
That's what it looks like. Okay. All right. Thank you, Senator.
And again, just trying to mirror what they've done on the federal level.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Does any other senator desire to be heard on amendment number 1? Senator from Franklin, what purpose do you rise?
To inquire the amendment maker.
Senator from Andrew, do you yield the senator from Franklin?
Most certainly I do.
You may proceed.
Senator.
Good evening.
Good evening. How are you? Obviously, I believe this is an amendment that I would support.
Thank you.
Are there any parts of this particular bill that you have concerns with yourself?
No, this is exact same language that we passed out of committee, and it's a language that we put on one of your bills.
I believe that was that past consent or not? Or was that?
It did pass consent.
It did pass consent. Again, Senator, I have no problem with your amendment, and I will fully support the amendment. Mr. President.
Senator from Franklin.
Could I speak to the, or inquire of the senator from St. Charles?
Senator from the 23rd. Senator of the 23rd does not appear to be in the chamber.
Oh. Senator from the second.
Senator from the second. Senator from the second, do you yield from an inquiry?
The senior
from the
senator
from
St.
Franklin.
Charles.
You may proceed.
Senator, have you listened to some of the questions and concerns that have been addressed here?
Are we talking about the amendment from the Senator from Andrew or the...
Just on the substitute, the language that was offered in the substitute.
Yeah, and that's what I was... You were speaking with the Senator for the 13th, or I was going to ask you some questions. You know, I am not terribly familiar with workers' comp law right now.
You are a physician.
I am a physician.
You are a physician.
And I was wondering, though, the main thing that your bill does is defines maximal medical improvement, which is a term of art right now that I guess is not defined in our workers' comp statutes. Is that correct?
I don't know that it's clearly defined, but what we're trying to do is we're trying to put in a definition to MMI, and then the substitute language offered as determined by the employer's physician.
Sure, sure.
I know that you've been maybe unfamiliar, but let me give you a little explanation how the workers' compensation process would work. An injured worker, obviously, is going to be seeking treatment from a physician.
Right.
And there is this conversation as to it's a doctor that I pay. Obviously, yes, the employer has the ability to direct the individual to the care provider.
Right.
And that care provider is really like any other particular they're a doctor.
Right.
They're going to be held to a degree of standard that all doctors
sure.
would practice under.
Standard.
So it's not like there's a huge conspiracy process that we get a doctor and we're going to, get these favorable ratings more for
sure.
the employer. And the reason why we put as determined by the employer's physician is because it is the employer's position that is the caregiver.
Right, right.
And so in your opinion...
For this particular injury. Yeah.
So in your opinion, being a doctor, if you've been the care provider, don't you think it makes perfectly sense for us to clarify that as determined by the... whether it be the treating physician, or we could call it employer's physician, but the treating physician would make the determination as to have they reached MMI, which is described as at the point at which the injured employee's medical condition is stabilized and can no longer reasonably improve. We could throw in language as that was discussed as to a degree of medical certainty could be thrown in there, too.
Yeah, and I guess... No, that all sounds reasonable, and I guess my question as I look at your substitute is that, you know, basically reaching MMI is what terminates temporary total or temporary partial disability, and I guess my question is, what right now terminates temporary total or temporary partial disability?
Well, ultimately, at some point in time, when a person has reached that point of we'll call maximum medical improvement.
Right.
I mean, they're authorized to return back to work.
Sure.
And once that individual returns back to work, either and or light duty,
right.
those benefits are terminated at that point.
Right.
And so
that's how it works right now.
That's how it works right now. So if a person is returned to light duty, I mean, he can be on TTD or TPD, if light duty or if he's still restricted or he hasn't improved the medical condition. But if that individual returns back to work, those temporary payments are terminated at that point,
right?
And then they're either paid, for light duty or ultimately back to full duty.
Okay. So under the present system, is there sometimes dispute between the employer's physician and some other treating physician?
Well, there may or may not be another treating physician, but, the goal of this legislation is to, when someone reaches that point of being returned back to work,
sure.
at that point, a settlement offer is made to that individual to close the
right.
claims out. And a rating, an individual is given a rating assessed by the treating physician, says
right.
that is an impairment of X number percent of that body part.
Right, right.
And this is the point at which that claim begins to stall if that individual disagrees. And you may go before an administrative law judge and present that to them. If he's not, I'll call it if he doesn't have an attorney. And he can either accept or reject that particular offer.
Right.
But if he's going to reject that settlement
right.
and says, no, I believe it's double that percentage,
right.
then he needs to acquire a rating from another physician
right.
that would back that up.
Right, right.
But the problem that occurs with this is that when there's no time limit placed on this...
It goes on forever.
It goes on forever. And so in the insurance world, what happens is that a reserve is set on that claim. And an employer has got an open claim, and there's a reserve set aside because we don't know what the settlement amount's going to be.
Right.
And as that just open-endedly continues to progress on, it may travel from one policy year to the next...
Right.
And it may go from that policy year to the next policy year.
Right.
It could go on multiple years. And you have no certainty as to the claim. And so, obviously, do you think reserves and insurance companies' reserves are going to be higher or lower than the actual cost of the claim?
Right, right.
What do you think would be the case? What do you think would be the chance?
If it's open-ended, it goes on forever, it's going to be higher.
So, obviously, you would agree that the potential for the claim, for the reserve to be higher...
Yeah.
Therefore, when the calculation of workers' compensation is done, they're always looking at that reserve amount.
Right.
And so what we're trying to do is to get these claims closed so that we have certainty, and the employer's insurance will reflect the actual cost of the damages.
Yeah.
And ultimately, that's what this bill's trying to do, is to put a time frame. We started at 6 months. We went to 9 months to obtain an additional, a disputed rating.
Right.
And in my estimation, I truly believe that if an attorney, what we don't want is an attorney to be dragging their feet, having so much of a big caseload that they don't schedule a rating, they don't get another doctor, and they say, you know what, it's not my dime.
Right.
It's not it's not hurting us because we've got all the time in the world.
Right.
We need to put a time stamp on it and say, no, we got to have a sense of urgency. We need to get this done because, you know, at some point in time, it's costing someone, and it's typically costing an employer to have these claims continue to hold open.
Right.
So I felt like 9 months, when we came out of committee, 9 months would have been a fair amount of time to get an appointment, have a doctor assess and give you a different rating, a disputed rating. And so ultimately the goal is to get these cases closed so that there's a degree of certainty for the employer.
No, that's right. Well, Senator, anytime we're looking at a new bill, and I don't. You may have filed this bill in a previous year. I'm not familiar.
I believe I filed this bill last year.
The question is, what is the problem you're seeking to solve? And right here, it sounds like the problem is that these workers' comp cases, if we don't set a hard and fast, timeline on them, they can go on.
And we're not trying to make it to where we set the window where they can't get over the bar. I mean, and I think we heard some legislation in this chamber this year where you may be served a particular paper that is time stamped, and if you reject that, you only have 10 days window. That's not the goal here. The goal here is to put a reasonable amount of time for a dispute, and we put in there that if there's extenuating circumstances that we couldn't get that done, you could go before administrative law judge. We put a catch-all in there to say, you know what, if you've got a circumstance where you've got to get to a specialist and you can't get an appointment, you can go to that administrative law judge and ask for an extension, and he would more than likely grant that extension. Again, this is not to game the system. It's just to try to put a reasonable time frame on here.
On it, which our present system doesn't have.
It doesn't have. There's none. It's open-ended. And again, I guarantee you there's multiple employers that could be out there, like myself, that have claims that have gone between two policy years, maybe onto a third policy year, that have an open claim because there's no sense of urgency to get these claims resolved.
Right.
And that's really what we're trying to accomplish with this legislation. And it sounds to me like that you think 9 months is a reasonable amount of time.
Seems like a reasonable time.
And that's from the point where that person has reached that improvement, has been offered, made an offer of settlement, and if he doesn't like that offer, he has 9 months to go get a second rating. And you think that's an adequate amount of time?
That sounds reasonable.
I mean, I don't know how far you're backed up on your with your cases. How long does it typically take if I called you and wanted an appointment?
It could take a while to get in to see a specialist.
How much time?
For me, month or two, depending. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
But typically, most specialists, how long would it take to get an appointment?
Surgical specialists, because they don't see patients every day, they're in the operating room part of the time, and certainly
comp cases tend to be orthopedics. You know, I'm in the office five right. days a week when I'm
There's
working
plenty of orthopedic
time.
Surgeons out there.
But
though.
Orthopedic surgeons, you know, I would say, you know, a couple months, you know, something, yeah.
But so, you think 9 months, a nine-month window of opportunity
think, yeah.
should be ample time, or if you had a specialist situation, you could be, go before an ALJ
right.
and get an extension.
Right. No,
I think what we've done, I think the compromise that we came up with, I think is a good compromise.
I think the purpose of the bill is to put, you know, a clear timeline, a fair timeline into the workers' comp law, and this seems like a good way to go.
All right. Mr. President, could I speak
senator
with the
from Franklin,
could I inquire the senator from the 13th?
Senator from the 13th, you yield from an inquiry from the senator from the 26th.
I do.
Senator, I know you probably listened to the conversation.
Listened to most of it, Senator. I was fiddling with another amendment.
Well, I think what we, again, you and I, we had an issue there. We were talking about the 9 months, whether it be adequate or not ever. But do you think that in the conversation we had there, again, in instances where a specialist may be necessary, that the language we put in there that allows for extenuating circumstances to take into those exceptions, are you comfortable with that language?
I'm not, but I have different language than what you and I talked about. You know, you and I talked about changing the 9 to a 6 and removing acquire a rating. And you were talking to the senator from the 2nd, and he let you know his cases, it could take a month to get in. I've gotten in. I actually had a work comp case that went longer than this. It went several years. I broke both my legs. And when I dealt with the orthopedic surgeon, it took a while to get in.
It took you a while to get to, the claim went on, but it probably took you a long time to reach MMI. Ultimately.
Yeah, that's true.
That amount of time, I think you have up to 400 in some weeks, if you know, a temporary and total or temporary permanent disability, I think is like 400 weeks of in the work comp statutes. I believe that may be correct. But until you reached the point where you were ready to go back to work, this didn't apply to that period of time.
Okay, so I'm looking back on page 10.
Okay.
On line 18, where I wanted to change 9 to a 6, and then on 19, where I wanted to take acquire a rating out and put in schedule a rating exam. What if we just do what you said before when we were talking and change 9 to a 12 and leave the rest of it alone?
I think that
so
at least it's better than we've got nothing right now. I think it's the goal, like I said, you know, would I probably agree 12 months is better than no time? Yeah, I think 9 months is adequate, but if you feel better with 12, I guess we could live with 12.
Okay, and then leave the other language.
And just leave it to 12 months to acquire a rating.
Not set up an appointment, just
right.
acquire a
you
rating.
You have to, if it's going to be
gotta
this
do it within that 12-month period.
Yeah. I mean, I could live with that. It's better than nothing. I mean, any other issues besides that one that you...
I actually love to visit with you about the other issue.
Well, while we've got the floor, we can visit on the other issues.
And everybody's riveted to our conversation, I see, once again.
I can
again.
Tell. They're all interested.
It must be Monday night.
They're all interested in work comp. I can see that.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
They think this is exciting. They should have been here about 9 or 10 years ago. Now, those are some good conversations on work comp. What page was that? Page five?
Yep.
So, I didn't like, as determined by the employer's position, and I kind of understand where you're coming from on the issue. What about inserting immediately after all of said line within a reasonable degree of medical certainty?
I don't have any problem with that language. I don't have any.
Those
any
are
problem.
The two amendments I have.
I have no problem with that language.
Well, that was easy. That wasn't even any fun, Senator.
Well, this doesn't always have to be about fun. I mean,
no, well, sure it does. Life should be about
fun. We're
having
fun. Yeah, this is, you know. No, I would. That language is not. I don't think that language is a problem there.
Okay.
Because I think for the most part, I think we would all agree that a reasonable degree of medical certainty is language that's all it would be acceptable.
Okay. Well, I have these amendments. I'm going to send them up. I guess both of them, please. Yes. Yes.
I will in my inquiry and let you send your
inquire
amendments
review about what you did this weekend.
If you want to, you can.
Well, I mean, we have to wait for those.
You first got to get recognized. Send them forward.
Yes, I do.
Mr. President, I'll end my inquiry at that point.
Does any other senator desire to be heard on Amendment Number 1? Amendment Number 1. Senator from the 13th, what purpose do you rise?
Still on Amendment Number 1?
We are still on Amendment Number 1. The Senator from Andrew.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Does any other senator desire to be heard on Amendment Number 1? Does any other senator desire to be heard on Amendment Number 1? Hearing none, Senator from Andrew, you are recognized close.
Mr. President, I renew my motion.
Senator from Andrew renews his motion that Senate Amendment Number 1 be adopted. As many as those opinion that motion shall prevail, say aye.
Aye.
Those of the contrary say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The amendment is adopted. We are now back on Senate substitute for Senate Committee substitute for Senate Bill 66 as amended. Does any senator desire to be heard? Senator from the 24th, what purpose do you rise?
Mr. President, may I inquire of the senator from the 13th?
Senator from the 13th, you yield to an inquiry from the senator from the 24th. Senator, you may proceed.
Senator, I'm going to take advantage of the ability I have to turn partway around. Hope that I don't get a crick in my neck because of facing forward and trying to figure out what's going on behind me. So I just wanted to make sure, I want to kind of bill with you and make sure that I'm clear on what it's doing and how we think it, you know what, I'm going to move my microphone, so bear with me a minute. How we think it may hurt or help people who are injured on the job. So if you don't mind, I'll run through that with you.
Okay.
The amendment the senator from Andrew just had passed,
right,
me is not problematic. Do you see any?
I don't know. I know that amendment was a consent bill, and I have no idea what it does because I was engaged in other conversations when he was.
I'm feeling as if that is not a problem. I remember inquiring of him the other day about that amendment because I didn't like some of the terminology that was used. But he explained to me that was federal terminology and we needed to align with the federal legislation. Senator, are you working on an amendment or two?
Senator?
Do you want me to sit down so you can send them forward?
Well, I thought I did send them forward. I gave them to the doorman. They need to go to the dais. Okay,
oh,
I see.
Oh, you need to officially offer them.
I see.
Is that what I'm hearing?
Yes,
so you
I
need
do.
To offer them. So that means
yes.
I need to sit down and
yes.
let you do
yes.
that? I will agree to do that. Mr.
Yes.
President, I'm sitting down.
Does any other senator desire to be heard? Senator from the 13th, what purpose do you rise?
Mr. President, I have an amendment.
Please send your amendment forward, and has it been distributed?
It has not. I ask that it I will not close till it's distributed.
All right, Senator, do you care to make the motion to adopt the amendment? And do you care?
I do. I make the motion to adopt the amendment to Senate substitute for Senate Committee substitute for Senate Bill 66.
If you explain your bill, and then we will not close until it has been distributed.
Okay.
Senator, you need to move for the adoption.
I move for the adoption of the amendment.
You may explain the amendment.
What this amendment does is changes on page. I'm going blind here, Mr. President. I don't have a copy of the amendment because they sent it all forward. But I think that it changes the 9 to a 12 is all it does on page, page 10. Nope, on page Yes, on page 10. Page 10, line 18, it reads, now a claimant shall have a period of 9 months from such date to acquire a rating, and I am changing that 9 to a 12, and it would read, if the amendment is successful, a claimant shall have a period of 12 months from such date to acquire a rating from a second physician of his or her own choosing. And that's all this amendment would do.
Does any other senator desire to be heard on amendment number 2 from the senator from the 13th? Senator from Franklin, what purpose do you rise?
Mr. President, again, I think this is the conversation that we agreed to. I think 9 was adequate. The senator from the 13th believes 12 is better. I'm willing to compromise to that extent, and I would support the amendment.
Does any other senator desire to be heard on amendment number 2 on the senator from the 13th? Does any other senator desire to be heard? Senator from the 24th, what purpose do you rise?
Mr. President, I'd like to inquire briefly of the senator from the 13th. May I inquire of the senator from the 13th?
Senator from 13th, you yield?
I do.
You may.
Thank you, Senator. Senator, I understand why you're changing that to give these people that are suffering from some kind of disability a few extra months so that they have
yes.
a year's period of time.
Well, and the reason I'm doing that is there, you know, the senator from Franklin, I respect the fact that he's willing to work with me.
Right.
He feels 9 months is adequate. I did speak with 3 attorneys today that work in that field, and they did not feel it was adequate, that sometimes that they try and schedule these and they can't get it done within 9 months. And I would think that if you can't get, now I know a couple of my doctors I have to schedule a year out, but those are maintenance, what I like to call them. But I think 12 months is a reasonable compromise. And that I think you should be able to acquire that rating within a 12-month period.
Okay, I understand that. My question would just be this. In some extreme circumstances where somebody is really very, very seriously injured, is there a possibility that that person may not be able to actually go access and go see a doctor within that period of time?
I would think that if there was a problem like that, that they could, there's exceptions to every rule.
Oh, you know what? Right, because in the next subsection it says, absent a finding of extenuating circumstances.
Yes.
So there is something put in there, and I'm wondering if you've changed the 9 to 12 in two places, in subsection 1 and subsection 2, because I think it's also referenced in subsection 2, unless on page 10, unless I am.
Oh, you are correct.
So maybe an amendment to the, is that right?
I believe so. We'll have to discuss that with the senator from Franklin, but you're looking at line 22.
I am.
Yeah. And it doesn't. Yeah.
I think that's a reference back.
So do we need to amend the amendment?
Right, that's what it sounds like. I'll sit down and allow you to do that, or do you want us to have it drafted and we can keep talking for a moment while.
Well, it looks like he's feverishly working on it.
Okay, right. So it's being worked on, so as soon as that comes over to you, I'll sit down and let you offer an amendment to your own amendment.
Okay, that sounds good.
All right. But it does, what I do like is that it does have extenuating circumstances written in, so
you
that.
You know what, Senator? I believe that the senator from Cole might have some guests to introduce, if you don't mind.
Not at all.
Three senators standing. Senator from Cole, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. I seek unanimous consent to introduce a very special guest.
Hearing no objection, you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. I appreciate my colleagues giving me just a quick minute to introduce Sadie Rowden. Sadie delivered to the Capitol today for a school fundraiser 45 pizzas. Did you cook them all? No, she didn't cook them.
But what she's probably most famous for, she's the granddaughter of our own Tammy Tackett right here. And Tammy is the hardest working, one of the hardest working people in the building. And she is her granddaughter. And she's also the daughter of Ryan and Lindsay Rowden here in Jefferson City. I'd like this chamber to make Sadie feel welcome in the Missouri Senate today.
Let's please welcome Sadie to the Missouri Senate today. Senator from Cole. Senator from Cole, if you would you send your guest and her mother up to the dais, please?
Send her and her grandmother up to the dais.
Her and her grandmother up here. Does any other senator, Senator from the 24th, you still have the floors?
Thank you. So, Senator, we were working on getting an amendment to your amendment in order to make sure that those 9 months are changed to 12 in both of those circumstances, so that a claimant has the ability or has the time needed to get a rating from a second physician. And I know that there's some discussion going on, so I'm just going to continue talking, even though I see that the amendment has been provided to you. But it looks as if there may be another way to deal with this, or you've got it. So are you ready for me to sit down so you can offer the amendment to the amendment? Okay. Thank you for the inquiry.
Does any other senator desire to be heard on amendment number 2 from the senator from 13th? Senator from 13th, what purpose you rise?
Mr. President, I have a substitute amendment.
Please send your substitute amendment forward. And has that amendment been distributed?
It has not, but I will not close until it has been.
Thank you. Senator, do you move for the adoption of the amendment?
I move for the adoption of the amendment to Senate Substitute for Senate Bill 66.
All right. Do you care to explain your amendment, Senator?
Yes. What this does is change that 9 to a 12 in both places so that it flows better, Senator, and that there is no differences there in the law if this should become law. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Does any other senator desire to be heard on amendment number on Senate Amendment number, Senate Substitute Amendment number 1. Senate Substitute Amendment number 1. Senator from the 24th, what purpose do you rise?
Mr. President.
Sorry, I got recognized, but it looks as if the senator from Franklin would like to speak, so maybe I will yield to him and then ask for the floor again. Thank you.
Does any senator desire to be heard on the Senate Substitute for Amendment number 2?
Mr. President.
Senator from Franklin, what purpose do you
To inquire the Senator the 13th.
Senator from 13th, you yield from inquiry from the Senator from Franklin. You may proceed.
I think we just overlooked a reference that in two sections. Obviously, the Senator from the 24th caught that reference.
Another one?
No. Okay. She had caught that we missed a reference to 9 months, and so I think this your substitute amendment just addresses those two particular issues.
Yeah, that's the only thing it does.
Okay. And so I am okay that shouldn't change.
Does not change anything else.
As far
just,
as that goes. You were going to
makes
inquire.
Makes it consistent throughout the bill.
You also were going to ask me about what I did this weekend. Was that something you were going to inquire?
What did you do this weekend, Senator?
I did a lot.
Let's hear it. What's a lot?
When I left here,
yeah,
you know, March 1st was Wednesday.
Yes, it was.
And I believe the Senator of the 7th, which is not as his desk right now, we went trout fishing. But when I left here on Thursday afternoon, I stopped by the spring, Merrimack Springs, and I went trout fishing.
Oh, that's cool.
And so, you know, enjoyed that.
Had good weather for it?
It was great weather, beautiful. I was very beautiful. But then as I went on to Friday, obviously, I have to go to my real job and kind of take care of some business there. But then I went and watched the boys and girls Sullivan basketball team play in the district championship game.
How'd they do?
Well, the girls won in overtime. Very exciting game. But here's the good thing about it, because the district I represent, some of my constituents was going to be happy regardless of the outcome.
Now, my alma mater, Sullivan, I graduated from, was playing St. Francis Borgia. I'm not sure if you're familiar.
I do. My alma mater used to make a road trip every year to St. Francis.
We played St. Francis Borgia, and unfortunately, again, those are constituents of mine, so they're very happy because they won the district title in boys' basketball. But the girls now will play in the next game, I believe in Kirkwood, as well as St. Francis Borgia boys will play. So very exciting basketball. And so on Saturday, then I was involved in a fish fry for a group of individuals, clay bird shoot. We had a clay bird shoot out of my farm for a bachelor party for my nephew, and we shot clay birds.
Fun.
Yeah, and we had pulled pork. We had quite a full weekend.
No fish?
No fishing on that day. But then on Sunday, we celebrated my daughter's birthdays and had birthday dinner. So I had a full weekend.
Sounds like it. I had one of those weekends, too, but it was all fun stuff. Sounds like yours was, too.
We had a blast. The weather was beautiful. We enjoyed the farm. We all rode four-wheelers. They fished. They shot clay birds and just had a big time.
So, they wore helmets on those four-wheelers?
These are UTVs that with cages, roll cages.
Oh, rolls.
And so,
okay, yeah, roll bars.
No, you know, the helmet law that's a whole other conversation.
Yeah, I don't care about the law one way or another. I just worry about, I know a couple of kids that didn't wear helmets. And
oh, yeah, they're very
unfortunate.
Very dangerous, but again, in the UTVs, obviously they have seat belts and mm-hmm. harnesses and doors now. And
so they were adhering to safety rules.
Well, I will tell you this, that everyone that came left safely. We had no incidents, and I was very happy that occurred. So.
Especially when you get a bunch of young men together.
There was about 40 of them.
Yeah.
So we had a good group of young men there. So
that's good. Sounds like you're going to have a fun wedding.
I
think my amendment has been distributed.
It has been
Senator.
Distributed, and I guess we can go to the point of voting on it. So
I
will end my inquiry.
Does any other senator desire to be heard on Senate Substitute Amendment number 1? Senator from the 23rd, 24th, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you. Almost got, would that be a promotion or a demotion? If you, I'm just kidding. So, yes, thank you. To inquire of the senator from the 13th.
Senator 13th, you yield to inquire from the senator from the 24th.
I do.
You may proceed, Senator.
You know, Senator, it just reminds me of the importance of us talking on the floor because we find little things like that need to change. So I'm glad that the sponsor of the legislation is letting you put that forward. I do have a question about the next line in the bill, so on page 11, that maybe you can help me figure out. The provisions of this subsection may be waived by the employer with or without stating a cause.
Wow, I didn't see that.
So I'm not sure, you know, maybe I will ask the sponsor of the bill later, but I was hoping that you knew what that meant.
I do not.
Okay.
I do not.
Well,
we need to talk to him about that.
Yeah, all right. So maybe I will ask him. But I also wanted to go back while I have you up just for a couple of minutes to talk about what this bill does. You know, we've worked on a lot of legislation over the last few weeks in session, or since actually the very beginning of session, that seems to put to give the advantage to the employer over the employees. And when somebody's hurt on the job, I think that we all have a great deal of sympathy for that having happened, and we want to do what's fair to the employer, but not at the expense of the employee who was injured.
No,
I wanted to get a sense overall from you of who wins in this bill and who loses, and is there a way that you think we can meet in the middle? I know.
Well,
go ahead.
You know, I originally liked the Senate Bill 66, and it seemed like to me after talking to one of the attorneys, all Senate Bill 66 did was add language on page 4, if you have the original bill in front of you. It added language that says, for the purposes of this chapter, maximum medical improvement shall mean, and it defines it, and then it defines temporary total disability or temporary partial disability benefits shall continue. I think it was a fix that was probably, I believe, asked for the department last year that didn't happen. So I was fine with that bill, but then we had the Senate committee substitute, and what did it add? So that added on page 4 of the Senate committee substitute, it looks like it added language that says, for temporary total disability, the employer shall pay compensation until the employee reaches maximum medical improvements unless such benefits are terminated by the employee's return to work or are terminated as otherwise specified in this chapter. And what that new language did, it took out the words "far not." It used to read, for temporary disability, the employer shall pay compensation for not more than 400 weeks during the continuance of such disability at the weekly rate of compensation in effect under this section on the date of the injury. And it further goes on to add the other language that was in the original bill. And then I guess we slept on it some, and then we came up with the substitute, the Senate substitute, that has these two other issues in it. And my amendment fixes the issue on page
10, I think, and 11.
Page 10.
10.
But okay. There's still an issue on page 5, and that's pretty, to me, that's pretty egregious. But
the employer's physician issue?
Yes. I just do not like that language. I mean,
right.
I don't know. The employer's physician implies to me that, you know, that physician is hired by the employer.
Right.
He's not independent to the process, and
right.
That's what worries me.
Right. And I understand, and I have that same concern about that line. I don't know if we're able to do anything to fix that to a mutually agreed upon physician or something.
Well, I think folks are working on that as well. I do have an amendment if they can't come to a resolution. But I'm going to think about that amendment, the other amendment I have to offer, but
right.
I'd sure like to know about that language you have a question about,
right.
But I think it would be better served for the senator from Franklin, because I don't know what...
I'm not sure what it refers to and what it means. So
right,
I will,
and it may mean, you know, it may not be a big deal, but we need to find out.
All right, I have one more question for you before I allow you or end the inquiry with you. But on page 6 of the Senate floor substitute, so the current bill we're working from,
right,
287-170, the new language, until the employee reaches maximum medical improvement, unless – oh, no, that isn't what I wanted to ask you about. Wait a minute. Oh, yeah, unless such benefits are terminated by the employee's return to work. So here's my question about that. Now, this may be referring to total temporary disability. So if you're able to return to work, it is not total disability.
Right.
You may still have a disability,
right.
But you're able to return to work. But it looks to me, based on that language, that once you return to work, your disability ends. And my question is, does it end or does it step down to a different level? Because just because you've returned to work doesn't mean your disability is completely gone. And we don't want to discourage people from returning to work.
No, but I think when you return to work, you're getting your salary or your hourly wage that you were getting prior to the accident.
Right, so, I understand that, but let me ask you a question about that. So,
but that doesn't mean that you have settled, I don't think, the compensation. It just means
okay.
That you wouldn't get your workman's compensation that you get when you get hurt. And I now I'm digging way deep, Senator, because I haven't dealt with this in a long time. You know, there's a chart, and it, believe it or not, your body parts are all like a percentage when you get hurt, and it's the creepiest thing you've ever seen. You get like 20% for this injury and 40% if this is injured and on down the line. That's a whole different ball, you know, and then that your work comp payments that you receive while you're off work, I believe, are based on that map, okay?
Uh-huh.
That's separate from a settlement with between you and your employer.
Okay, so the settlement, so maybe long-term care. So if I have to continue
going
to see a physical therapist or a chiropractor
be,
or getting medication,
I think stuff that goes
that's,
on.
That's separate from I'm no longer getting paid my salary because I'm staying home. I still return to work. It doesn't mean I've ended my ability to get my
insurance. No, no, no. Does that mean you've closed the case or that you've abdicated your ability to pursue your suit? It just means that if you go back to work, you're not going to get workman's comp money every week you do.
Because you're getting your salary, and workman's comp was designed to replace your salary when you've been injured.
And I think that currently that's the law, but we're adding in until the employee reaches.
Three senators standing. Senator from Cape Girardeau, what purpose do you rise?
Speak unanimous consent to introduce a very special guest, and sorry for interrupting the exhilarating debate.
Hearing no objection, Senator, you may proceed.
I would like to introduce Congressman Jason Smith, Congressman from the 8th District, and also his aide, Shelley Keeney, used to be Representative Kelly Sheeney, and now she's working for Congressman Smith, so he's up here to let us know what's happening in Washington, D.C., and we're glad to have him here, and please give him a very warm welcome.
Let's please welcome the congressman and the guest of the Senator from Cape Girardeau. If you'd please stand and be recognized by the Missouri Senate. Senators, you may proceed.
Thank you.
Does that mean Mr. Smith has returned from Washington?
I saw that movie.
I saw that movie, too. We're dating ourselves.
Right.
It's two names from the past in this
for
us.
Right.
But that's all that means there, Senator. We're just adding in the language that says, now I lost the place. Until the employee reaches maximum medical improvement.
Unless prior to that.
Prior to that, it was already there that says, benefits are terminated by the employee's return to work or are terminated as otherwise specified in this chapter, but in no event.
Okay. All right. So you're good with that. That doesn't limit a person's ability to get.
No, I think this language is common language that's used now on both sides of that issue. It's just not in law.
All right.
And that was the whole point of this bill in the first place.
Okay, which was just designed to get the language
up to
speed.
But we've added
now it's got
things.
A couple of areas that are causing some heartburn for some of us in the room. Okay, well, I appreciate the inquiry, Senator. Thank you.
Thank you. You might want to. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yes. Mr. President, may I inquire briefly of the senator?
Senator from the 24th, what purpose do you rise?
I will slow down a moment. May I inquire of the senator from Franklin, please?
Senator from Franklin. Senator from Franklin. Senator from Franklin, do you yield from an inquiry from the senator from the 24th?
I do.
You may proceed.
Thank you, Senator. I'm sorry to pull you away. I know there are some people here to say hello to. My question is on page 11 of your bill.
Okay.
It's just that subsection 4. The provisions of this subsection may be waived by the employer with or without stating a cause.
Well, again, if an employer wants to waive the time limit, an employer could waive that time limit.
So that's what it's referring to, back to. So in other words, you can say, even though you've provided for extenuating circumstances, the employer may say, we don't need a second physician.
Yeah, what he might do is he might waive the time limit. I mean, he could waive that. The provisions of this subsection could be waived. The employer could make that, could waive that and say, okay, I understand that you could waive that. I mean, it's not a bad thing.
And it's referring to all of Section 7?
I think
subsections 1, 2, and 3?
I believe it is referring to that, yes.
Right. So he could waive the requirement of a second physician is how I'm reading it.
No, I don't think he's waiving that. I think he's waiving what we're waiving is the period of time is what the goal is to do there.
Well, okay. I'm not
that
sure.
That I would allow for that extension of time.
Okay, but there. Okay, you know what? Fine. I think it's actually broader than that, but if it's broader than that, then I'm good with it.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, Senator.
Does any other senator desire to be heard on Senate Substitute Amendment Number 1? Senator from the 1st, what purpose do you rise?
To inquire the senator from the 13th.
Senator from the 13th, you yield for an inquiry from the senator from the 1st.
I do.
Senator from the 1st, you may proceed.
You know, Senator, I think we're pretty close to closing on your amendment here, but while Congressman Smith is with us, I just wanted to relate one of my better experiences in the Missouri House of Representatives that involved him. He and I were both advocating, I think it's fair to say, differing points of view on a particular issue, but we reached an agreement on how we were going to proceed, and it required my holding substantially my entire caucus and him holding enough people in his caucus on a vote that was very difficult for a lot of them. And I just remember standing at the back of the House chamber side by side as we were watching the board light up and seeing the compromise hold when neither of us really assumed that it would. And it's not always fashionable in this day and age to talk about people working across the aisle in that manner, but I have to say it was one of my prouder moments in the Missouri House. The deal held, and it was a very good experience that I had in government. It was a pleasure to be a party to that with him, and certainly wish he and his constituents in Southeast Missouri all the very best in Washington.
Senator, was he in your class?
I think he was already there. I was in the very abbreviated class of 2010. Myself and the senator from Cape were two and through in the House. We both served a single term over there and then came over here. Myself.
Didn't like it there or what?
Sometimes things just work out that way, Senator. But I think wasn't long after that when Representative Smith became Congressman Smith.
That's right. I remember that. I served with Representative Smith over there in the House, and it was indeed a pleasure.
But it was an issue that was, I think, very difficult for folks on both sides of the issue to come to agreement on, and to go through all that and to get to something everybody could agree to or disagree on and live with, and then to actually punch it through was...
Yeah, that's kind of tough. Sometimes.
Not something you get to do every day in the Missouri House. So.
No, but you get to do it in the Senate.
That's
a
right.
Little bit.
That's right. Well, it was a good experience. So, Senator, thank you for the inquiry.
Thank you.
Does any other senator desire to be heard on Senate Substitute Amendment Number 1 for Amendment Number 2? Does any other senator desire to be heard? Senator from the 13th, you are recognized to close on your amendment.
Mr. President, I close.
The Senator from the 13th renews her motion that Senate Substitute Amendment Number 1 be adopted. As many of the opinion that motion shall prevail, say aye. Those of the contrary say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The amendment is adopted. We are now back on Senate Substitute for Senate Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 66 as amended. Senator from the 1st, what purpose do you rise?
President, I have an amendment.
Please send your amendment forward. Has the amendment been distributed?
It has, Mr. President. It has been distributed. Ends in .03S. I seek a waiver of the reading and move for its adoption.
Hearing no objection, the reading will be waived. Senator, do you care to explain your amendment?
Yes, Mr. President. This amendment goes to the language on page 5 that I was discussing previously with the senator from Franklin. I have some concerns here, and if my amendment were to be adopted, a lot of my heartburn with this bill would be considerably aided. So, sub 12, lines 22 through 25 on page 5, define maximum medical improvement, and as we previously mentioned, does so by making it be determined by the employer's physician, but not by a reasonable degree of medical certainty, or at least those words are not in the section. So what my amendment does is simply strikes the words as determined by the employer's physician from line 25 and adds improve within a reasonable degree of medical certainty to finish that line. The idea, Mr. President, is to have both sides the opportunity to have experts weigh in on what is maximum medical improvement. And while there's language later in the bill that arguably does that along the lines that the Senator from the 13th and the Senator from Franklin just discussed, I'm just concerned with having maximum medical improvement in statute be solely through the eyes of the employer's physician. And I also think it's important that we clarify that opinion evidence be within a reasonable degree of medical certainty. So that is what the amendment does. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Does any senator desire to be heard on amendment number 3? Senator from Franklin, what purpose do you rise?
Mr. President, to inquire, Senator from the 1st.
Senator from 1st, you yield for an inquiry from the Senator from Franklin.
I do.
You may proceed.
Obviously, your amendment strikes out as determined by the employer's physician.
Correct.
Again, I had a conversation with the senator from St. Charles, the senior senator from St. Charles, as to the treating physician.
Yes.
My conversation led me to believe that the treating physician obviously had probably the best chance to make that determination because he was the treating physician.
And forgive me, do we equate treating physician with employer's physician?
Well, that is the equation because obviously he's being through the workers' compensation, he is directed, the care is directed by the employer, and then therefore that caregiver would be the treating physician and or the employer, as in this language, the employer's physician. But ultimately in the two, it's the same, but the treating physician obviously is the one that makes the determination because he's been treating the patient throughout the length of the injury.
Well, I understand. I understand your point of view on that. I really do. You know, as I'm looking through this section of law, I actually don't see, and maybe I'm just missing it, I don't see where we define employer's physician anywhere. And in that regard, I mean, there are different permutations that we could adopt here or not adopt, but I'm not sure we have defined. Okay, so sub 1, we define employee. Sub 2, we define accident. Sub 3, injury. Sub 4, death. Sub 5 gets beyond, well, let's see here. Sub 5 doesn't appear to be definitional. Sub 6, total disability. Sub 7, commission. Sub 8, division. Sub 9, minor. Sub 10, accident or occupational disease. And then 11, occupational disease. I don't know that we define employer's physician or treating physician, and I understand what you're trying to do. Obviously, I've come up with one approach to trying to skin that cat, but I would recognize that there are other ways to go about doing that. My main concern is I just don't want to have everything determined by one doctor and have that doctor's point of view endorsed in law to the exclusion of all others. I mean, I agree with you in general, the treating physician is going to be better positioned. It's not clear to me even that that's necessarily the employer's physician here.
And I believe at that point, obviously, if there's a disputed resolution, that therefore another opinion comes that would go before an administrative law judge. So there is still room for an additional opinion that would be as determined as to the severity of the injury. But again, for the purpose of this section, because what we're trying to do is we're trying to get to a dispute resolution. When a physician has determined that we're at the point where an injured and medical condition has stabilized, can no longer reasonably improve, that's when, once we have reached that position, is when the settlement offer is made as to the,
right.
the condition or the percentage of body part loss or whatever that's there, and then the dispute process may come at that point. If they, in the event that individual has an attorney, they may look at that and say, we believe it's 10% higher than what that doctor originally had offered on that particular body part, whatever it be, finger, knee, elbow.
Yeah, to the senator from the 13th point, it is somewhat macabre how all that works. my fundamental concern is that, especially, I mean, it would be one thing if we said treating physician, but when we say employer's physician, and I get that what you're saying is that the employer's physician is always the treating physician and vice versa, even just, there are different ways we could do this, but even just saying treating physician, in my mind, would be better. And I'll say this. I mean, what my amendment does is strikes that language altogether and adds the medical opinion evidence standard. If there are other ways...
And I'm okay with that particular phrase, within a reasonable degree of medical certainty.
That's
okay.
Helpful.
I'm okay with that. I think I prefer, as determined by the... That determination is done because that is the employer's physician that has made that determination.
You know what? This is your inquiry. So I will probably at some point before terribly long want to circle back with the senator from the second on that point. My first struggle is with saying it's employer's physician. Second, if employer's means treating, I would prefer that we say treating. My amendment and my preference would be just not to have it be one-sided. I mean, it's your inquiry, but I'm asking a question perhaps rhetorically. What's the problem with even having it say, as determined by the ALJ, or...
ALJ is not the treating physician. Obviously,
true.
That's why I said I believe it's very critical, because that who better to know the individual's condition as the treating physician or the, again, in this case, the language is employer's physician.
Well,
I don't think anyone could make that determination any better than the person that's been there throughout the whole process.
Well, but you'd agree with me that two doctors are capable of disagreement on that. I mean...
Well, they could be. I mean,
sure.
There's no doubt there could be. I mean, and again, but there's going to be, but for the most part, I truly believe, and again, as I ask some of the questions, I believe they're all held to a certain degree of standard within a physician's,
sure.
you know, code of ethics that they're going to... make it to the best degree of medical certainty that they're going to make a decision, and there would be disputes as to, you know, one level or another.
I hear what you're saying, but let me say this, because in an ideal, perfect world, that would be absolutely correct, and we could always rely on the company's doctor because they're treating to make the right call. I suspect in the real world how it plays out, and I will freely grant that how it plays out is imperfect. But, you know, these cases either get resolved quickly and everybody agrees as to what the facts are, or they don't. For these cases to end up getting heard and contested, by definition, there are going to be dueling experts with different opinions, and these are both medical doctors. And not to put too fine a point on it, but...
But typically we're arguing over the degree of impairment. I mean, I would say very rarely do you offer or do we argue about the point beyond that. I would agree.
Acts of medical improvement.
Yeah, I think we probably are arguing about the degree of impairment that is at question in most cases.
I hear you, but my point is that respectfully, and not to generalize, but I think it's a generalization that holds in most cases, you're usually going to have one doctor for the claimant, who lo and behold is usually going to render an opinion that either the degree of impairment is greater than the company doctor is going to argue, or that, for instance, maximum medical improvement has not been reached. And I get that that's the less common occurrence, and I think that that's probably right. I don't practice workers' compensation law, nor I mean, I actually have carried workers' compensation coverage. I had a small business up and running last year that had better part of 80 folks all walking around door to door. So we carry comp coverage for that. So I have had insured covered employees. But Not all at the same time, but it was a staggering amount of W-2s that we sent out at the start of the year. With 20
didn't have any dog bites in that. Would that would have been covered under a work comp claim, I would assume.
You know, but that's the point. And it's funny because I always tell folks when you're going door to door, it's a really important axiom that every dog is a friendly dog, because people sometimes are sensitive to the fact that their dogs might be intimidating, but by and large, it's not the best first impression of somebody to knock on their door, have them come to the door, and then, like, flinch at the sight of their dog, right? So I always tell them, just assume every dog is going to lick your hand and not, you know, detach your hand. And lo and behold, back in the 2004 congressional primary, in what was then the 3rd District, which was a 10-way open gate primary, I was knocking on doors with an individual who had done campaigns in several different states. He may have been the field director. He was seasoned campaign staff. On the very first door he knocked on in the campaign, had been in 5 or 6 states, worked a bunch of campaigns. Very first door of that entire campaign, got bit by a dog for the first time in his career.
I will say this, that this is going way back in the archives.
Yeah.
Somebody maybe even said that a while ago. Kit Bond, and when he ran for governor, I'm not even sure how old I was. But my father was involved in the political process, and we were going door to door for Kit Bond, and I was bitten by a dog as a young individual at that point in time.
No workers' comp claim, though.
There was no workers' comp. Obviously, it was more of my pride was hurt than anything else. But it definitely, when you knock on a door and a dog runs out and bites you in the leg, that was didn't want me to go knock on the next door.
Well, the other thing that happens once every election year, it will happen once. If you're knocking on doors enough, this will happen to you. Invariably, you will be shaking the hand of the man or the woman of the house, and their pet will already be 20 feet past you, heading down the street, off in no particular direction, trying to play in traffic. And that will happen about once a year. And with any luck, you can usually run the pet down pretty quickly because, again, not a terribly endearing thing to be the reason that somebody's dog just absconded. But that will happen. And then about the best you can usually do is to suggest that if they're not inclined to support you for state senate, that perhaps they would consider voting for you for dog catcher at least once you've returned their pet. But
you can return them.
If you can, yeah. Well, I've never had that happen. I've never had somebody actually permanently lose a pet on account of my visit. But, knock on wood, our desks here are wood, I suppose. But in any event.
Senator, I believe, again, that I'm okay with the language that you've offered within a reasonable degree of medical certainty. But I do want to try to hold the line on the language on the treating physician as the employer's physician. And with that conversation, Mr. President, I have a substitute amendment.
Senator from Franklin, send your substitute amendment forward. Has your amendment been distributed?
It has not, but it is short and it could be read.
Madam Secretary, would you please read the amendment?
Phone's going. Somebody's on the phone.
Senate Substitute Amendment 1 for Senate Amendment Number 3, offered by Senator Schatz. Amend Senate Substitutes, Senate Committee Substitute, Senate Bill Number 66, page 5, section 287.020, line 25, by inserting after the word, quote, physician, end quote, the following, quote, within a reasonable degree of medical certainty, end quote.
Senator, would you care to move for the adoption of that amendment?
I would move for the adoption of that.
Do you care to explain your amendment?
Mr. President, again, as the senator from the first night I've had the conversation, he believes the language within a reasonable degree of medical certainty is appropriate. I believe that the employer's physician, that language is appropriate. Therefore, that just inserts that and then adds to that extent within a reasonable degree of medical certainty. And with that, I'll entertain any questions.
Senator from Buchanan, are you seeking recognition?
To inquire of the senator from the first.
Senator from the first, you yield to an inquiry from the senator from Buchanan. You
Thank
may proceed.
Thank you, Senator. I was sitting by you in committee when we both voted no on this bill.
Yeah.
I think that the bill is trying to solve a problem, which is that a lot of people get injured and their treatment goes on and on and on. And even after they seem to have reached sort of the maximum medical benefit of the treatment. And so I think the bill is designed to try to get a handle on that and make it so that in work comp insurance companies and employers paying for that insurance don't pay for people getting work comp benefits longer than what they really need. Would that be a fair way of stating the problem?
I think that's what the bill is intended to address. And reasonable minds could differ as to whether it does so appropriately.
Okay, well, let me just tell you my experience as a physician.
Please.
Because, you know, when you're a private medical doctor and you're taking care of your patients, and
yeah.
I had, I don't know, 5,000-10,000 patients. I had a
wow.
bunch. And I always looked at my patients as, and my care of them is, I'm trying to do the very best thing for you, what will get you well the quickest and is in your best interest to get well. But many times I had my patients, they would get injured on the job, and then they would get ripped away from me and given to another physician who allegedly would provide a service that was better because I was under suspicion at that point. The work comp establishment basically said that I would be more likely to be soft-hearted and give them more time off and say that they didn't really have to go to work because I was working for the patient. Whereas the work comp doc was working for the employer. And I always kind of took offense to that, although I do know that it's true in some cases, but I wasn't very likely to just give people more time off just because they were on my patient and they asked me for it. You know, I kind of always felt that I tried to do the right thing. And so there was always this tension where I could, you know, I would look at that situation and I felt bad because I wasn't able to take care of my own patient. And the patients sometimes would come to me and they would describe their work comp injury, you know, their injury on the job, and they would let me know what the treatment that they were receiving was. And sometimes it was okay, but sometimes I was kind of outraged that they were being kind of treated at a level that I didn't think was correct. I mean, I took a lot of exceptions with, you know, like, you'll be going back to work now, and the patient was obviously having a lot of pain. Let's just say it was just something like a sprained ankle. You'll be going back to work now, and I would never make one of my patients go back to work under similar circumstances. And so I've developed a healthy suspicion about the motivations of some physicians taking care of work comp patients. I think that sometimes they do things more for the employer than they do for the patient. Not always.
At the very least, it is a fair question to ask. And it is fair to have a process that has, if you will, checks and balances in order to guard against precisely the concern that I think you just articulated very well.
Well, this bill basically just puts it all onto the employer's physician to make this decision. And there's no appeal. At least I haven't found it in there.
Well, let me ask you about that, because I read the language on page 10 basically to provide a second bite at the apple's the wrong word, but provide at least for a second opinion. And so while I feel...
But that's a second opinion for determining the rating, the disability rating, not for determining whether
maximal medical
benefit.
Well, and that is the concern that motivates my amendment. I mean, and the senator from Franklin says, and I don't necessarily have a reason to disagree with him, that generally it's the rating that's being litigated, not maximum medical improvement, but I'm sure there are cases where maximum medical improvement is at issue.
Well, see, the thing is, if I'm injured on the job, and I go to my employer's physician, the one that they choose for me, and a little bit of time goes by, and I feel like I've got a long way to go, and that, you know, I think that you just give me a little bit more time, I might get better. And the doc says, no, this doesn't look like you're achieving, you're not improving. He does something like, I don't know, like grip strength or just something, and says, you've reached maximal medical benefit. And, like, I have seen patients who you thought kind of had plateaued out as far as getting better, and then they suddenly got even more better. And so I have a healthy suspicion based upon my 30-plus years of medical practice that there needs to be some, like, appeal to another doctor, because this matters, because it says temporary total disability or temporary partial disability benefits shall continue until the employee reaches maximum medical improvement. So what happens then? You go, the doc says, you've reached maximum medical improvement. Suddenly, you're cut off. You're not going to get any more temporary total disability or temporary partial disability. What happens to you at that point? Do you automatically, magically get a rating? Are you fired? Are you told to go back to work? I mean, what happens then? And I feel like we're going to be leaving people in the lurch, and I myself would feel more comfortable if there was an appeal to, or a somebody,
some kind of checks and balances.
Do you understand what I'm saying?
Well, yeah. Well, Senator, let me ask you this. I mean, it strikes me, however we resolve my amendment, which I think addresses your concern,
well,
at least.
What good is it? I mean, what good is your amendment unless you can go to court and say, doctor, was that to a reasonable degree of medical certainty? Is there a mechanism? Like I can you imagine the work comp doc not saying that? I mean, if asked, or will it be on a form? And will the doctor say, I believe that this patient has, improved to maximum medical improvement, and they'll just write on the form, within a reasonable degree of medical certainty, and that's all the effect that your amendment will have?
Well, as amended, yes. I mean, as offered, my amendment at least makes it such that it's not just the employer's physician that's part of this. I mean, my amendment, by taking out as determined by the employer's physician, makes it a two-party proposition, where it's not in statute that it has to be the employer's physician and only the employer's physician who's weighing in. That's the intent of my amendment. I agree with the substitute amendment. That renders my amendment meaningless. And I'll even further grant you, Senator, that adding language to the bill providing for how you resolve disputes regarding maximum medical improvement would go further to address your concern. The problem that we have with the bill as it's currently worded and or under the substitute amendment is that the answer is there simply is no process for disputing when maximum medical improvement has reached. And while we all like to think that there's no world in which company physicians simply decide people who have reached maximum medical improvement the minute they come home from the ER, there's nothing to guard against it.
Well, the thing is, I don't know what the truth of the matter is, because I'm not directly involved as an employer dealing with people, but I do know that if I send somebody to the work comp doc and they eventually get released to go back to work, it's over. I mean, they don't get any more benefits right then. But if the person, you know, is trying, going to rehab, and they just go and go and go, and they kind of plateau out, is it right to just suddenly say, well, time to cut off your benefits. You're not going to get any more because you've plateaued out. Well, if the time lag between that and having a rating is a long period of time, these people are just going to be left with no income. That, I mean, that's my question.
Yeah. Unless they go back to work.
Well, not if they're going to work, they don't get any. I mean, that's what it says. It says it right there. It says, shall continue until the employee reaches maximum medical improvement unless such benefits are terminated by the employee's return to work.
Or are terminated as otherwise specified in this chapter.
So the thing is the way I look at this is your settlement is going to be, you know, a long period of time. You're going to get paid. It could be permanently, couldn't it, your settlement? I mean, you could end up with
permanent. Well, in cases of permanent total, conceivably, I mean, maybe.
It could be, yeah. If it's permanent total disability, you could just go on and on getting your payment. So what difference does it make if they're getting, you know, they're 66 2/3% or whatever, while for the amount of time that after maximum medical benefit, to whenever. The point that I'm making is whenever I see a bill like this, I think about who's benefiting and who's getting hurt. And as I see it, somebody's benefiting, and it's probably employers and insurance companies, and somebody's getting hurt, and it's probably employees, because I can tell you that there is no way that this bill is designed and is being offered to help employees.
I share your concern, Senator, and I oppose the bill. I opposed it in committee. I am trying to get this amendment on, not the substitute amendment, but my underlying amendment, to try to at least not have the maximum medical improvement determination confined solely to the determination of a company physician. And I think my amendment achieves that, not as amended, if the substitute prevails.
Well, in my experience as a physician, whenever my patient went to a work comp doctor, it is never the case that they went and I thought that they would get treated better than I would treat them. But it is usually the case that they would go and I would think that they got treated worse than what I would treat them. And that's my personal, professional experience. And I would say most of the time, I thought that they got treated kind of like rushed along and in a way that I would never have treated my patients. That's my experience.
Well, and I think your experience validates my concern with the bill. One of my concerns with the bill. Senator, let me ask you this. I mean, certainly if the substitute amendment passes, my efforts to protect against unilateral decision-making by company doctors on determinations of maximum medical improvement will have been futile with respect to this section of the bill. Is there a possibility that some kind of dispute resolution or appeal process could be amended on to give folks an ability to contest that issue if the substitute amendment is going to carry the day on my amendment?
Well, first of all, Senator, you know the substitute amendment is going to carry the day.
Well, I...
you know that.
I look in this room right now, and it's actually on a voice vote. It's a fair question.
A voice vote, it could actually go down, but then they would just call for a standing division. And it would, but the thing is there a way to actually do this and put in some kind of an appeal as to the decision on maximum medical benefit? And because I'm telling you that the employer's physicians are the ones, they are always going to err on the side of you already hit maximum medical benefit. I'm telling you, they're never going to delay it. They're always, every single time, only going to make it shorter.
Well,
the question is, who's getting hurt by that?
Yeah, and I share your concern. My underlying amendment is my best effort to address your concern and take it from being whatever the company doctor says being the only consideration.
Well, let's talk
made.
About this.
Sure.
Okay, so there's this period of time here. Okay, here's the injury, and then there's this period of time of treatment right up until you hit maximal medical benefit under this bill, okay?
Yep.
Now I need your I need you to look.
Okay.
So injury, maximum medical benefit.
Right.
And then there's this period of time that was allowed, I think it's maximum of 400 weeks. 400 weeks. Okay. Now, at some point, the person's got to get a rating.
Right.
After which they get a settlement, and the settlement takes them for the rest of their life.
Right.
Okay. Now, here's the thing. If it turns out to be a total permanent disability, at the point of when you get your settlement, you can get a check for the rest of your life, right?
Potentially, depending on how you structure it, yeah.
Would the check be backdated to this point here where you hit maximal medical benefit?
I think as you read and as I think I read, the language on page 6, lines 2 through 4, I think what this bill is now saying is that, well, that's just partial disability payments. Well, temporary total disability or temporary partial disability shall continue until terminated by return to work. In the case of permanent total, that would not be the case, and that section doesn't speak to permanent total. I don't read the bill to be changing the law on the question you've posed, Senator.
Well, see, my question is, does the employee get treated fairly such that it doesn't really matter when they... It could be that the senator from Franklin's bill doesn't really matter, as long as they get paid for all of that time in their final settlement. Now, well, I hear him saying that it doesn't matter, but I mean, like, I don't see that written in the law. I don't get it yet.
Well, and here's the other concern, Senator. We are looking at the definition that this bill puts forth. One, I share your concern. Two, I'm not certain that the bill changes that. But three, if it does, it might be because the definition, the term maximum medical improvement may appear in more than just this section of statute. And that's what I don't know. That's what I don't know standing here. If maximum medical improvement, now that it's a defined term and defined in this manner, applies not only to Section 287.020, we take up 020, we take up 149, we take up 390.
Yeah,
if the term maximum medical improvement appears anywhere else in statute, we are changing the meaning of those laws too.
Well, see, my question then is, If you have the current law situation where, you know, the person goes until they come to a rating and then they get the rating, or versus this bill, which is they go until they hit maximum medical benefit and then at some point they get paid, my question is there any difference in those two amounts? And if there isn't any difference, then why do we need the bill?
And if there is, it goes back to your question, Senator, of who are we hurting?
To inquire of him. Mr. President?
Senator from Buchanan.
May I inquire of the Senator from Franklin?
Senator from Franklin, do you yield to the Senator from Buchanan?
I do.
You may proceed.
Okay, so the question was, if there's no difference in how much they're getting paid, then what's the need for the bill?
Because this bill is designed to get a claim resolved. The whole purpose behind this is to say once that individual, we're trying to define MMI so that when an offer of settlement has been made to the employee and they dispute the rating, it's more about the process to when they get there and then they say, okay, the doctor assesses that at a 10% of that body part and you've got an attorney and they say, no, we believe it's 20%. We're trying to put it, we had to have a starting point and an ending point. So the starting point is maximum medical improvement, and then you have a period which is amended to 12 months to get an alternative rating. So the whole point was, let's resolve the case so we don't have open claims that just can go on for eternity. And that's what this whole idea is about, is to try to put a process in place where we can get a resolution, and we have to have a starting point from when we make the offer of settlement to the point where they have either accept a settlement or they come back with an alternative rating. And so that's why we had to start with MMI, as determined by the employer's physician. So that's the starting point when an offer of settlement is made to the individual. You're confusing this to say that we're trying to game the system some way and shorten that window and say doctors are going to spit them out. That is not even a valid claim, because employers don't want injured workers on the job if they're not improved. But I mean, once they've been released to go back to work, then the insurance companies will come and they'll say you've been rated at 10% or 15% of that body part, and we're going to offer you a settlement for that disability is X, and if you dispute it, here's your window of opportunity to bring that claims and get it resolved. And so that's the point where that's why we're trying to get to this point.
So are you anticipating that a person continues to improve until some doctor says, the employer's doctor, you've reached maximum medical improvement, at which point they go back to work?
But typically that's the way the system works right now, is because they'll either be, once they're returned to light duty work, I mean, once they've improved to a point, it doesn't necessarily occur at the point when they return to light duty. They still may be a process where they improve to where they're released to full duty. So they may lose their temporary payments the minute that they're released to light duty. So at the point where they're released to light duty, they can't double dip, so they're going to get paid their salary. They can't receive 66 and two-thirds of their wages because they're getting paid their full salary. And so improvement may continue on, albeit the whole time they're being paid. So they're not missing out on any opportunity to have any wages earned because they're being paid throughout the process. And so when they reach MMI, there's a point when they get to that point, a doctor says we believe that he's ready to go back to full duty. At that point, a settlement offer is made.
Okay,
so there's not any time where they're not going to get paid.
How much time is there between MMI and settlement offer?
12 months now. We went to 12 months.
So if the person's not able to work...
If a person's not able to work, they have 400 weeks.
Okay, but if they're not able to work, okay, and they've reached MMI.
If they're not able to work and they've reached MMI, they're probably totally disabled at that point. If they can't go back to work, if they cannot return to work, then there is a remedy in the system for that.
Okay.
What we're trying to solve here is the opportunity to close cases where there's no urgency to get it done.
Okay, I understand that. But now, here's my question, specifically. Person meets MMI.
Right.
And so between that time and the point in time at which they have 12 months to reach the, or whenever they reach their settlement.
Right.
How do they survive in that?
They're still working. They're getting paid. They've gone back to work.
No, what if they're unable to work? They've reached
if they're, if they're, but again, I don't know that that ever necessarily what you're trying to consider occurs, where an individual would have never returned to work, and we'd say, okay, he's reached MMI. Okay, but if he's at that point, if he's reached MMI and he can't return to work, then he's probably going to be determined totally disabled.
Okay, but now I've got to point out, you have it in your bill on page 6, starting with line 1. The benefits shall continue until the employee reaches MMI unless such benefits are terminated by the employee's return to work.
Or other as otherwise specified in this chapter. Right. Okay. And it specifies in this chapter that the permanency of the employee's disability shall not be established or adjudicated while the employee is participating in the rehab services.
Okay, so, here's
so there's other
I'm
parts
saying.
That deal with what you're talking about.
At any point in time when you've returned to work, it logically follows that you have not yet reached MMI.
There's a lot of times they don't reach MMI. They come back to work light duty. A doctor would prescribe light duty work and say, you can do no bending, lifting, sitting, squatting
right.
of more than 10 pounds, and I'm going to pay you your full wage to pay you light duty.
I'm with you on that.
Yeah, okay.
I understand that. But I'm talking about the case of where a person never does get to the point where they can go do even light duty.
And if they don't, they're going to continue for up to 400 weeks.
Right, and or unless they reach MMI.
Or MMI, but again, at that point, I mean, again, I don't see a doctor taking the point and saying he's reached MMI. I don't get what you're saying, because I don't think we're going to get to that point.
So let's just say you get injured, you got a real severe foot injury, and just throwing something out. Okay. And so this person has a lot of pain, I see stuff like this. I mean, I have in my life. And so you're treating them, and they're getting a little bit better, but then they just stop getting better, but they can't work because it just hurts them too much, so they don't go to work. And then suddenly they've plateaued off, and the doc says, you're at MMI, and it's only been a year. They don't have 400 weeks. So it's been a year. My question is, I want to know, what happens then? I mean,
if that doctor has authorized that individual and he says that you're released to go to work, then he has an obligation to go to work.
Hey, no, but this person never gets released to go to work because
if he's never released to go to work, there's a remedy within the work comp system that deals with that. Again, what we're trying to deal with is the time from which you've reached MMI. That starts the clock, and you have 12 months in order to dispute resolution.
And my question is, right now, the time, there is no time. There's 400 weeks.
There's 400 weeks, yeah.
400 weeks. And you're pulling the payment for temporary or temporary payment from 400 weeks back to MMI. And my question to you is, how does this person support themselves between then and then?
Wait, I mean, they're not, again, if they have not returned to work, they're not losing any benefits. They're still being paid their benefits.
Well, you're saying, Lexan, all I know is what I read in your bill.
I'm reading on page 6. It says, it goes on to say, unless such benefits are terminated by the return to work or are terminated under specified in this chapter, which specified in this chapter is 400 weeks. So if they go back to work, it's terminated. Or it gets terminated at 400 weeks.
Okay, but it says right in the preceding sentence, temporary total disability or temporary partial disability benefits shall continue until the employee reaches MMI.
Unless such benefits are terminated by the return to work or otherwise specified in this chapter.
So you're saying to me that if MMI occurs before 400 weeks, they still get 400 weeks worth of benefits.
If they're not, have they not returned to work, if the individual has never been able to return to work, it's not going to terminate them because of MMI. MMI will not terminate their benefits. If they cannot return to work, again, if the treating physician that determines MMI says, you know what, I'm not authorizing this guy to go to work. He has 400 weeks.
So this is the case that I'm worried about. And I want to make sure...
You're baffling me because I can't figure out what case we're trying to determine.
Okay, here's the thing, because I've seen things like this. Okay, guy gets injured, reaches MMI, can't go back to work, and it is not yet 400 weeks. You're representing to me that under this chapter, they get to continue on their benefits until 400 weeks is up.
I'm representing to you that I'm not sure that a doctor, if he's injured to the point where he has reached MMI and cannot return to work, I do not believe that it terminates his benefits. I believe those benefits would be available until the point in time a permanent disability has been determined.
Okay, Senator, what is your level of certainty as to the veracity of that?
I'm pretty sure if I look in this where it says or otherwise specified in this chapter, you look at and read the other parts of that, and I believe that's why I believe I'm confident in what I'm saying.
Okay, but you see how I could look at that first sentence and say that once you get to MMI that your benefits terminate. Because it's kind of implied by that first sentence.
But it says, and you go on into 287.170, it says, for temporary total disability, the employer shall pay compensation until he reaches MMI, unless such benefits are terminated by the return to work or terminated otherwise specified in this chapter, but in no event, no more than 400 weeks during the continuance of such disability.
Right. So, and see, when it says, or as terminated otherwise specified in this chapter, I take that to mean as terminated before MMI.
I don't see that. What I'm saying is I think that it specifies that's what it's specifying is that 400 weeks. If you get 401 weeks,
I have a lot of respect for you and your expertise in this area, and so I'm just simply asking you, is your level of confidence in your statement low, medium, or high?
I think it's pretty high because I don't believe in any circumstance the intent of this legislation is not to take someone off MMI if they have not returned to work or their ability is not to return to work. If the treating physician, the employer physician, says, you know what, they're not good to go to work, we're not trying to take away benefits from them unless they go beyond 400 weeks. That's the intent.
I understand that. And I hope that you can see the source of my...
I understand your concern, but I think it's... But I believe that there is an... Again, what we're trying to address here probably confuses the subject just a little bit as to of why we have to have an MMI and a settlement... and a time. That's a starting time, so that we can have an ending time.
Well, see, the thing is, if you're correct, then I don't really care so much about the senator from the First Amendment.
I've got it. My amendment is, out there to...
I think your amendment kind of undoes...
It adds the language that he would like to have had, and
hey,
so...
But if you're wrong, then...
Here's the thing. Then if we're wrong, obviously we have an opportunity. It's got to go from one to the other. And yeah. So we can have this conversation, and we can investigate this further. But I don't know that you and I are going to get it determined. But
the outcome of the amendment is already...
It's foregone conclusion.
Foregone
I literally
conclusion.
Believe that there's only three people in here. I don't really think we need to do a quorum call, but I think that...
What's true is true, and the thing is, that's true. Your amendment's going to pass. Yeah. But I really need to know the answer.
We will get to
that. I am not a yes on the bill until I know for sure that what
you're saying is. I understand it.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you.
Does any other senator desire to be heard on Senate Substitute Amendment Number 1 for Amendment Number 3, the senator from the First? Does any other senator desire to be heard? Hearing none, the senator from the First is recognized to close. Senator from Franklin, you are recognized to close.
I'm closing.
Senator from Franklin renews his motion that Senate substitute for Amendment Number 1 be adopted. As many as have the opinion that the motion shall prevail, say aye.
Aye.
Those contrary say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The amendment is adopted. We are now back on Senate substitute for Senate committee substitute for Senate Bill 66 as amended. Does any senator desire to be heard? Does any senator desire to be heard? Senator from First. What purpose do you rise?
To inquire the senator from Buchanan.
Senator from Buchanan, do you yield from the Senator from the First?
I do.
You may proceed.
Senator, I was listening to your exchange with the Senator from Franklin. So the substitute amendment went on?
Yeah, it was a foregone conclusion.
So I guess my next question is now what? I mean, I share your concerns with this bill.
Well, do you understand what I was talking about hitting maximum medical benefit, not being able to return to work? He represented to me that he believes that the person in that condition would continue to receive benefits all the way up to 400 weeks. Do you think that's true?
Not as I read. Well, I don't know that the sections covered in this bill answer that question,
well,
Senator.
Well, he says that the words, as otherwise specified in this chapter,
right.
He says that elsewhere in this chapter it says that in that case you get to keep receiving the benefits.
You know, so, Senator, actually, I'll just pose to you the question. I, the substitute amendment went on. I'm not sure where that gives us to go, where that leaves us to go with this. That said, I think I'm going to ask a question or two to the Senator from Franklin.
Thank you, Senator.
Mr. President, may I inquire the Senator
from Franklin? Senator from the First, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. May I inquire the Senator from Franklin?
Senator from Franklin, do you yield on inquiry from the Senator from the First?
I do.
You may proceed.
All right. I'm sorry, Senator. I was asking the Senator from Buchanan a question for which you offered an answer, and I just want to – I figure I may as well ask you instead.
I believe further down in that section where it says, as otherwise specified in this chapter, and when you look down there, and again on line 19, when you read starting at 15, it basically says for temporary or total disability, the employer shall pay until they reach MMI,
right.
Unless benefits are terminated by a return to work, which that, again, he says they never return to work, or as otherwise specified in this chapter, but no event, again, that 400 weeks.
That's so we're leaving weeks. A language that says 400 weeks in.
So in the event that they never return to work,
MMI,
they would be up to, that was about 400 weeks.
A court in looking at this would say, look, if they meant to take the benefits away for that gap, they would have taken out the 400 weeks.
Right.
So, well, at the same time, though, I'll say this. I'm not sure that this chapter otherwise specifies anything either, though. Let me ask this, and we've got a definition of maximum medical improvement. One of the questions I asked earlier that actually the folks at the research table were kind enough to answer for me, I asked a question of the senator from the 34th. We don't know where else in statute, if anywhere, maximum medical improvement appears, and of course it turns out it doesn't. It's case law and regulation where you find that term nowhere else in our statute. Let me ask this, just to be sure that we guard against unintended consequences, and you and I disagree over who should be deciding, and that's what we have the legislative process for, is to resolve disagreements as best we can. What if we were simply to cabin the definition of maximum medical improvement to the sections in dispute? I only say that because part of my concern here is by adopting a new definition of maximum medical improvement, you've got a body of case law, you've got regulations out there that might arguably mean something different or play out differently than what they do currently and or what you're intending, Senator. And I understand you and the Senator from Buchanan disagree about the impact of this bill, and I share the Senator from Buchanan's concerns, and that's why I'm probably a no vote at the end of the day. I'm just trying to find a way to make sure that he and I have as much reassurance as possible.
How
it's going to work out.
I understand, but I, again, as I explained to Senator from Buchanan, the reason we put, I believe, MMI in there, because it's a point in time where once you've reached that, a settlement offer is made. And that, therefore, what we're trying to get, and in claims resolution, we have to have a starting point to say that the clock starts ticking and an ending point.
Right, and infinity so, and beyond is not a reasonable
right.
point.
Right, and so infinity and beyond, but so when you say you had to define MMI because that's the at the point when a settlement offer has been tendered. So that's why we put MMI in there. That's why we put a description to it. We tried to make it to the point, again, so that when the clock starts ticking, once that occurs, that you have any dispute resolution, you have 12 months now in order to do that. I mean, it's not that complicated of a bill. I think we've overcomplicated it because we're concerned.
I share the concerns of the Senator from Buchanan. I just don't want to see people having
There is no intention in order to, and again, the intent of this bill, the beginning part of this bill was trying to get claims resolution in a timely manner for employers so as they go through their work comp renewals that they don't have claims that just are open forever. I mean, that's really what we were trying to accomplish, and it gets very complex the more lawyers, the more people that you get looking into it and they start reading anything, but that was the intent of the legislation to begin with.
Well, and I understand your intent. I'm just concerned about the language we have on the page. Senator, thank you. Mr. President. Okay.
Does any other senator desire to be heard?
Mr. President.
Senator from the first.
Inquire the senator from Buchanan.
Senator from Buchanan, do you yield to inquire the senator from the first?
I do.
So, Senator, I'll ask it this way. I think you and I have concerns with the bill in its current form. My question to you, this is perfection. I do not have any other amendments prepared, nor do I see in front of me amendments that I think are likely to make the bill less unpalatable to you and I that the senator from Franklin is likely to take. But do you have any thoughts?
I do. Since the senator from Franklin represents that in the case where a person is not able to go to work and has reached maximum medical benefits, that their benefits will continue in that case up to 400 weeks, simply stating that in a sentence and adding it to the bill would address my concern.
Well,
but also, I mean, if that's the case, there shouldn't be any problem with it, right?
Yeah, well, we've been here before.
Because, I mean, after all, if you can go back to work, then you're good. You go back to work. But if you can't go to work, it's that person that can't go back to work that reaches maximum medical benefit. I just would like to make sure that their benefits continue.
Senator, do you have language?
400 weeks.
So do you have language
to that
effect?
Why don't we just spell that out in a sentence since it's the truth, and you shouldn't have any problem with it. Let's just do it.
Well, Senator, is that an amendment you want to offer, or you want me to get back to the drafting table? There's, I mean, not to put too fine a point on it, I see five senators on the floor right now, and it takes two to talk and probably one to draft. And I see the senator from Franklin is getting up, so I'm going to terminate this inquiry and let you two talk. Mr. President?
Senator from the first.
May I inquire the senator from Callaway?
Senator from Callaway, do you yield?
I do.
Proceed.
Senator, this is what you get for sitting at your desk on the floor. The senator from Buchanan and the senator from Franklin are behind me, I think, talking about language. I don't know if they're going to be on the same page. Now they're not talking about language, but... I see the senator from Buchanan heading in the direction of the drafting table, which causes me to believe that he might be wanting to get the drafters working on something. I think the senator from Franklin stepped off the floor, which is understandable when that need from time to time to step out of here arises when you're handling a bill that's taking a little longer than you might have hoped or anticipated. Sometimes you have to step off the floor, so I get that. Senator... I think we missed each other this afternoon. I serve on your committee on professional licensing and registration, but you were up in judiciary, I think, presenting a bill.
I was.
And I also serve on the judiciary committee, and I think we were ships passing in the night. I was down in licensing while you were up in judiciary, and then I went up to judiciary, but you had already left and I think headed back down to licensing.
That's the nature of the beast, isn't it? We run and run.
That's what we get for being double-scheduled, Senator.
Well, you have more of that than I do.
Well, that's just how it goes. Particularly, in the case of licensing, which is your committee, my 2 years in the House and every year I've been in the Senate, I've served on the Licensing and Professional Registration Committee. I've dealt with scope of practice issues and have spent several years building up that knowledge base, so it was a committee that I wanted to continue on, even though between scheduling and just the scope of that committee changing a little bit, it changed. But I'm on judiciary. I'm one of two licensed attorneys in the Senate, and kind of tough to duck judiciary with that being the case. So, Senator, hopefully next week we'll at least get to spend a little bit more time together in licensing. How's that?
Sounds good.
Senator, I appreciate your accepting my inquiry. Mr. President.
Senator from the first.
May I inquire the senator from Buchanan?
Senator from Buchanan, do you yield?
I do.
Proceed.
Okay.
Senator, were you getting tired of hearing my inquiry of the senator from Callaway?
No, that's okay. So the situation is that the senator from Franklin
yep.
is quite confident in his statement.
Yeah.
And yet, when I read these words that are in the bill, and it says temporary total disability or temporary partial disability benefits shall continue until the employee reaches maximal medical improvement.
Your concern
to me,
is, yeah.
To me, that statement right there means that they end at maximal medical improvement.
And by then, not saying anything about permanent total, we're arguably leaving that out of the mix, is your
right,
concern.
But then it says, unless otherwise specified in this chapter, and then he points to line 19 where it says, but in no event more than 400 weeks.
Right.
And see, to my way of thinking, those words, in no event more than 400 weeks, do not imply, but they will continue until 400 weeks. I mean, that they don't have the same meaning. And so there is some ambiguity here, and I'm concerned about these people, and that was the reason I voted against the bill in committee.
Senator, I hear you, and I also heard the senator from Franklin's take on it, and
he could be absolutely right.
Well, yeah, and my challenge as an attorney is I can argue both. I can argue your point, and I can argue his point. In that regard, I would say I'm a little more comfortable saying a little bit more in the bill to make sure it's absolutely clear.
Right. I just want absolute clarity, and so I think the amendment that they're drafting right now, which just simply states that, should be okay. And now here's the question that I have, because I'm not an expert in unemployment law, work comp law, but when a person gets their benefits, is it more or less than the 66% that you get under temporary disability?
I think that depends on, if you're talking post-settlement, that depends on the settlement.
Okay, if you're permanently totally disabled,
right,
do you get just only 66%?
Don't
forever?
Know. And here's where the limit of my experience as a non-workers' compensation attorney is reached. I don't know the answer.
Well, if it turns out that you get more than that, then a person would have a natural incentive to go ahead and settle and get it, you know?
I'm looking
at higher benefit.
I'm looking at page 6 while drafters are drafting here. So since we've got a few minutes, let's use it to try to answer your question as best we can. All right. So for all injuries, weekly compensation equal to 66 2/3% of the average weekly earnings, provided that weekly compensation shall not exceed an amount equal to 70% of the state average weekly wage. All right. So there's that. For all injuries up until 1990.
I don't think it's in that I don't think it's in the bill. I think it's in a different section of the chapter.
That may very well be. I'm just looking to see what the bill, at least what the sections implicated in the bill do say. For all injuries occurring after one.
Well, I think they usually give you some, like 400, you know, so many hundred weeks of settlement. But
yeah.
I can't remember whether it's more or less than the 66 2/3 that you get when you're just sort of temporarily
yeah.
disabled.
Well, the point is if all of these injury categories say 66 2/3, I don't know in what universe you would settle on a different basis. But I don't know.
Well, it matters.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And,
no, it
and
does.
The reason it matters is that if you're going along and you're getting 66 2/3 of your salary, and they say, okay, here's your... It's going to be less. It's not going to be less? Well, could it be more is the question. Because if it's more, like let's say it's 80% or 100% or whatever, then at least you're made whole. I mean, you got injured. You ought to get 100% of your wages. And the thing is, you would have an incentive to go ahead and say, okay, doc, I've reached maximal medical incentive, put me on permanent and let me go on, because you'd be making more money that way. I mean, you'd get rid of the case. But if it's not that way, then it really shouldn't matter too much. You know, to you as the patient, if you're not going to be able to go back to work, and it looks like you're never going to be able to go back to work, and you've hit maximal medical benefit, as long as it doesn't cost you to go ahead and settle, you would probably do that. And if you were going to make a little bit more money, then you would for sure do that. I mean, who wants to just keep things hanging forever?
Yeah. Well, I noted yet again in that last response that you gave, we had a little give and take between you and the senator from Franklin amidst this inquiry, and what folks sitting in there, well, yeah, what folks listening wouldn't realize is that I'm right next to him on the floor, and you're just about directly behind me, certainly as you go toward the dais. I mean, you've got another desk in front of you, but we're all in very close proximity to the, of one another, and so there's been a little bit more off-channel give and take here. So, Senator, I assume a very simple sentence making it very clear what this bill does and does not do in the cases in the case of permanent total disability would be sufficient to satisfy your concern and hopefully be acceptable to the senator from Franklin. Is that where we're headed here?
Yes. But the thing is that if you don't have a permanent total disability,
right,
that means you can go back to work.
Hopefully, yes.
And if you can go back to work, once you reach maximal medical benefit,
sure,
you should be able to go back to work. Or if you went back to work earlier, then you're not going to be getting paid anymore anyway. So the only real group that really scares me here is those people who aren't able to go back to work and have reached MMI.
Yep.
Those are the set that I'm worried about.
Senator, I share your concern. I think your attention is desired elsewhere. Thank you for the inquiry. Mr. President.
Oh, hey, so I'm asked, you want to go and inquire of, yeah.
Senator from the First, what purpose do you rise?
May I inquire of the Senator from Franklin?
Senator from Franklin, do you yield for an inquiry from the Senator from the First?
Do.
You may proceed.
So, Senator, no great state secret here. What we are doing in the moment is giving the Senator from Buchanan the opportunity to get his amendment in
right.
order.
That is correct.
Yeah. So,
if we could probably potentially dispose of the, at this point, dispose of the amendment that's pending.
Oh, I thought we already had.
I do not.
I think your substitute.
Oh, yes, we are. I guess we are. Have we? I believe maybe we have disposed of the amendment.
Yeah.
Yes, we
have. So my offered amendment one.
Okay.
Was,
and I amended it. Yes, and so
your substitute was adopted.
Yeah.
Had you not prevailed on that voice vote, we would be back to my amendment.
That's but right. You're correct. No, we have prevailed. So we're waiting on the senator from Buchanan.
A chorus of
amendment.
Thousands on that voice vote.
It was close.
Senator, I mean,
actually, it was pretty close. It was actually very close.
You could practically see the roof on the Senate rising with all of that hot air on that voice vote, Senator.
It was very close.
I mean,
I'm not sure how he called that.
I don't know either, Senator. I mean, I'm not even certain that we would have had the requisite number of senators to seek a standing division had he not known how to call
we
it.
We would have been challenged for that.
Yeah.
So.
Normally on Monday evenings, you got a little bit more of an audience. But
well, I know that there's some things going on currently that people are engaged in. So
you know, I think there are things going on that people are expecting me to be engaged in. But I'm funny when there's a bill on the floor. I'm facing perfection that I have some concerns with. I tend to be.
I'm hopeful that we can address the Senator from Buchanan's amendment. And
you know, from the looks at the dais, Senator, I don't think you're the only one hoping that.
I'm getting some glaring stares at this point.
Well. I appreciate the exchange on my amendment, even though it wasn't quite the outcome I was hoping for, but appreciate the dialogue on that. And it looks like the senator from Buchanan is back at his desk, so I'm going to put down my microphone. Thank you, Mr. President. Thank you, Senator.
Does any other senator desire to be heard? Senator from Buchanan, what purpose do you rise?
I have an amendment.
You send your amendment forward.
The amendment has not been distributed, and I would wait to close until such time as it has, and I move for its adoption.
Senator, you care to explain your amendment?
Sure. This amendment would go on line 22 after the word made on page 6, and basically it would just clarify that the temporary permanent disability payments would continue after the person reached MMI until the limit allowed by law in that case. And that's what it does. So, Mr. President?
Senator from Buchanan.
To inquire of the Senator from the First.
Senator from the First, you yield to an inquiry from the Senator from Buchanan.
I do.
You may proceed.
So anyway, I think that this section of the law on line 15 on page 6 talks about temporary total disability.
Yep.
And that's all it's talking about. So the temporary partial disability doesn't really apply to that section. And the as it was explained to me by the analyst, the temporary partial disability wouldn't even really apply until you'd reached MMI anyway, and then you wouldn't be in the rehabilitative process, so you would lose your benefit there anyway. But the 400 weeks only applies to the temporary total disability.
Well, I don't have your amendment, Senator. Did you have it read, or are you waiting? It's coming. Here it is.
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure, because this is a little bit more complicated than
what you had in mind, maybe.
Maybe it needed to be distributed. And
so this is in the case of an injured employee who has reached maximum medical improvement but is unable to return to work. Such employee shall receive temporary total disability benefits for up to 400 weeks during the continuance of such disability at the weekly rate of compensation in effect under the section. On the date of entry for which compensation is made. That is a complete sentence.
It does address my concern. So the senator from Franklin is being called out.
Got it. Well, that might serve to elongate this conversation. I don't know. Maybe he's just putting your amendment under the microscope, Senator.
Well,
which I guess now would be the time. So, in any event, now that we're having what we call a mound conference in the business, I want to let the pitcher and catcher and pitching coach set the infield defense.
So the senator from Franklin would like to have the words "but not to exceed" on line 5 of my amendment, so that it would say "for up to, but not to exceed."
Ah, I see.
I mean, that sounds pretty reasonable, because
that's current law, right? I mean,
right.
Yeah.
And so he's going to have that drafted up as a substitute, and offer that.
That could possibly even be done as an amendment to the amendment, but that's up to him and the drafting table. But if the senator from Franklin is inclined to plead his case on that, I will happily terminate this inquiry and give
the two of you the
opportunity to do that.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Does any other senator desire to be heard on amendment number 4? Senator from Franklin, what purpose do you rise?
President, to inquire of Senator from Buchanan.
Senator from Buchanan, do you yield?
I do.
To inquire from the senator from Franklin.
I believe we're in the process of getting what we discussed, but not to exceed. We're okay with the language other than just inserting, but not to exceed 400 weeks. You're okay with that?
Yeah, we have time to burn while they do that. But
hopefully
I've got to ask
this
question.
Hopefully they do this in a timely manner, I would hope.
If I say up to a year, does it not imply that it is not to exceed a year?
You know, it's in the same way that I think we're probably restating facts here, that's probably what we believe is already in law, I'm going to just probably tighten it up to make sure that we say, but not to exceed, even though, so it's kind of like putting another Band-Aid on top of the Band-Aid.
It's called belt and suspenders.
Okay, I knew there was the word for that, I just couldn't come up with it quick enough.
So you feel that up to 400 weeks isn't quite as good as up to, but not to
but
exceed.
Not to exceed. Yeah, I think that is a better set of belt and suspenders.
Okay, well, you know something? In a sense, my entire amendment is belt and suspenders, isn't it?
Yes.
Because, I mean, there seems to me to be a little bit of unclarity.
Unclarity, if we get it clarified, and I believe that we have something here.
Oh, and it's an amendment to the amendment.
We have an amendment. Mr. President.
Senator from Franklin.
I have an amendment to the amendment.
Please send your amendment forward.
It's very simple. It has not been distributed. I would ask that it be read. It's very short.
Madam Secretary, please read the amendment.
Senate Amendment 1 for Senate Amendment Number 4, offered by Senator Schatz. Amend Senate Amendment 4, Senate Substitutes, Senate Committee Substitutes, Senate Bill Number 66, page 1, line 5, by inserting after the word, quote, to, end quote, the following, quote, but not to exceed, end quote.
Senator Franklin, do you move for the adoption of that?
I move for the adoption.
You care to explain your amendment?
Again, very simple. We're just adding, as the Senator from Buchanan said, a belt and suspenders to, but not to exceed, language. And with that, I'll entertain any questions.
Does any senator desire to be heard on Amendment Number 1 to Amendment Number 4? Does any senator desire to be heard? Hearing none, Senator, you're recognized. Close.
I close.
The Senator from Franklin renews his motion that Senate Amendment 1 to Senate Amendment 4 be adopted. As many as are of the opinion that motion shall prevail, say aye.
Aye.
Those of the contrary say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The Amendment 1 to Amendment 4 has been adopted. Does anyone else desire to be heard on Amendment Number 4 as amended? Senator from Buchanan.
Prior to the Senator from Cole.
Senator from Cole, do you yield to an inquiry from the Senator from Buchanan?
I do.
Senator, are we on mountain time yet?
When I see you walk in, I automatically go to Hawaiian time. I just skip three or four time zones and write it up.
I just wondered just if we made it to mountain time yet or not, but that's okay.
It's all good.
Thank you. Mr. President, I close.
Senator from Buchanan, is any other senator desire to be heard on Senate Amendment 4 as amended? Senator from Buchanan, you are now recognized. Close.
I close.
The Senator from Buchanan renews his motion that Senate Amendment 4, as amended, be adopted. As many as those of the opinion that most shall prevail, say aye.
Aye.
Those contrary say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The amendment is adopted. We are now back on Senate Substitute for Senate Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 66, as amended. Does any senator desire to be heard? Does any senator desire to be heard? Senator from Franklin, you are recognized to close.
Thank you, Mr. President. I close.
Senator from Franklin moves that Senate Substitute for Senate Committee Substitute for Senate Bill as adopted for Senate Bill Number 66 be adopted. As many as of the opinion that motion shall prevail, say aye.
Aye.
Those of the contrary say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Senator from Franklin.
President, I now move that Senate Substitute for Senate Substitute for Senate substitute for Senate Bill number 66 to be declared perfected and ordered printed.
You've heard the motion from the senator from Franklin. Does any senator desire to be heard? Hearing none, Senator from Franklin, you're recognized. Close.
I close.
Senator from Franklin moves that Senate substitute for Senate committee substitute for Senate Bill number 66 be declared perfected and ordered printed. As many as have the opinion that that motion shall prevail, say aye. Those of the contrary say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The bill is declared perfected and ordered printed. Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. Would you inquire the Secretary if there are messages from the House? If so, I ask them to please be read.
There are messages from the House. Madam Secretary, would you please read the messages?
Mr. President, I'm instructed by the House of Representatives to inform the Senate that the House has taken up and passed House Committee Substitute House Bill 292, entitled An Act Relating to Powers of Banks. Also, Mr. President, I'm instructed by the House of Representatives to inform the Senate that the House has taken up and passed House Bill 207, entitled An Act Relating to a Prohibition on Certain Telecommunications Items Being Possessed in Correctional Facilities. Also, Mr. President, I'm instructed by the House of Representatives to inform the Senate that the House has taken up and passed House Bill 493, entitled An Act Relating to Real Property Owned by Limited Liability Companies. Also, Mr. President, I'm instructed by the House of Representatives to inform the Senate that the House has taken up and passed House Bill 169, entitled An Act Relating to Legislative Review of Audits Conducted by the State Auditor's Office. Also, Mr. President, I'm instructed by the House of Representatives to inform the Senate that the House has taken up and passed House Committee Substitute House Bill 661, entitled An Act Relating to the Comprehensive State Energy Plan. Also, Mr. President, I am instructed by the House of Representatives to inform the Senate that the House has taken up and passed House Bill 700, entitled An Act Relating to the Designation of a Highway, in which the concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested. Respectfully submitted, Daniel Adam Crumless, Chief Clerk.
Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of announcements.
Hearing no objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of announcements. Hearing none, Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. No further business coming for the body. I move the Senate stand adjourned until 2 p.m. Tuesday, March 7th, 2017.
Senator from Cole moves that the Senate stand adjourned until 2 p.m. on Tuesday, March the 7th. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The Senate is adjourned until 2 p.m. Tuesday, March the 7th.